2011 F-POM.
All this stuff's been happening.
I get him. And so I get his pole and I start reeling it, you know, reeling it in for him. I realize he's a lion.
What are you talking about?
Here's a little data fodder for you.
These guys are running.
Back up Dave Wills has a little bit of information about passing through power. That's 2010.
Hey, Bill, we've got a seat, one of these seats for you right here.
I was going to look this up, but I didn't.
Now, I should have been a
water or a painting or
a T-Bag. This is kind of up near the head of the meeting. I can't go to sleep.
This works.
Okay.
Oh yeah.
This isn't too bad of a chair.
So you're like kind of bouncing now.
Yeah. Kind of.
Well, you're late getting information.
Kind of sets me. I think I can sit here for a while. I got a bad back.
It probably will need adjustment because the laws are bouncing so much.
Maybe it's better.
We're not certain that we've got a set vertical now.
Okay. I think I can work with that.
All right, we are going to get started, and I know we have a few folks on the phone. We also have a first-time F-Palm attendee with us today, so I actually haven't officially met you, so.
My name is Lisa Wright. I just started on Monday, and I'm the new fish buyer for the core RCC. I'm working directly with Doug Bowes. Most recently, I was with BPA, and then for that, working upstairs and down here, and USGS for 7 years in COVID. So we've been all over the place.
That's great.
Looking forward to this.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We also need to make the announcement that there is cake back here because we have a birthday this month of one of our more prominent FPOM members. And we have a departure of one of our more prominent FPOM members. I'll just leave it at that.
That's the best.
Well,
I'll let you take that.
Happy birthday.
I don't know who it is. Somebody. Whoever that guy is.
Well, Lisa, welcome. We're glad to have you, and I'm glad you have Doug there to, you know, it's going to be a tough road there for a while, but you're in good hands. So welcome aboard. Glad you're here. And there are several folks on the phone, so I guess for the benefit of those on the phone, let's go around the room here. And since we just started with Lisa, why don't we just keep going with Doug?
Doug Bowes, Corps RCC.
Dennis Schwartz, Corps of Engineers District.
Greg Moody, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
John Bailey, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
Bill Havlin, NIMS.
Terry Mackey, Portland District.
Tim Dykstra, Corps of Engineers, Walla Walla.
Eric Frederick, Snow Fisheries.
Shane Scott, Public Power Council.
Trevor Condor, NOAA Fisheries.
Bob Cordy, Corps for the Dells.
Mio Zindo, Corps, John Day.
Dan Stevenson, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Portland District.
And on the phone?
Yes, Steve Richards, Selfish Camp.
Aaron Jack from the Umatilla Tribes.
Dave Statler, that's First Tribe.
Russ Keeper, Otto Fish and Tank.
Great. Thanks for joining us. We do have a full agenda. I guess I will just take a minute since it did come up already. A lot of folks have heard. I just accepted a job with the Corps at Division. Folks knew Paul Oker before. I'm backfilling behind Paul. I guess my official job title is Environmental Stewardship Business Line Manager for the Division level. So, anyway.
Spit polish and ties. Tassels. And shiny boots.
No more money.
Can't talk to him anymore either.
No money.
Where's Paul going again?
Welcome to Oregon.
Paul lateraled within Division to basically Lori Rux, who's head of operations for the Corps. He is the assistant chief of operations at the Division level. So.
Hey, Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah, congratulations for that move.
Thanks, Russ. Appreciate it. So, yeah, this will actually be my last FPALM, I believe. I'm still in the Walla Walla District June and July, and then make the transition over starting in August. However, the July FPALM, I'll actually have 1 week of transition on this new job where I'll be in D.C. on budget meetings. So I won't be here for the July FPALM. And then it was convenient. I already had two family vacations planned for August. And so I'll really be moving here 1st of September. So that's the plan. And with that.
One word about the July FPALM. Uh-huh. I won't be here for the July FPALM. I highly encourage you to pack snacks.
Do we need to have one in July? No, I'm serious. Is there any need to have an
FPALM? Maybe we don't need to have one.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we can coordinate.
That's good.
Maybe
some
just have a phone call.
I know a lot of people have some pretty busy calendars.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm not going to be here, so you want to cancel the
meeting? Yeah. That's the only reason we're here.
Or, Tim. Yeah. Not literally getting a lot of resistance here, am I?
Tim, who will chair it then? If you're
Burn.
Another reason to cancel.
So we'll talk to Burn about it.
Yeah.
So,
well, who's going to be the wall rep? That'll be the big question at that point.
Yeah.
Who's going to be the co-chair for Walla Walla?
And I think that's a question that is unknown at this time.
Who do we call? Who are you going
to
call?
In the meantime, I'm still on board June and July. So.
July. Okay.
Yep. And I would say, in lieu of any other future announcements, Greg and John would. Greg, as most people know, oversees fish passage plan stuff and adult fish issues. John is kind of overseeing juvenile fish and transport issues in the Walla Walla. So continue to use Greg and John until we have further announcements. So we do have a pretty full agenda today. And are there any anything that anyone would like to add to the agenda? Trevor, I have under researcher updates added alternative gear mortality study.
Yeah, I'm just going to give a brief synopsis on kind of what their study is and where we're at with it. I'm not going to give any information on the AFF, though.
Okay.
I'm going to pull that off.
Sounds good. We'll add to under researcher updates.
And then I have one, too. I'm not sure if it was resolved on the Dells Crowder issue and then the other projects about opening it at night all the way. Other projects don't have that requirement. I can't remember if that was resolved or not.
Okay. Well, let's...
You were going to head up a group to look at the FPP and come up with language that could be used for all the projects.
I was. Well, there it is.
No answer.
I'll
for account window.
Okay.
Yeah.
And we'll work with Bob.
You got raceways issue. There? You've been hiding some raceways?
Sure. Okay.
Tim?
Bill?
A reminder that we need to be out of this room at 2:45 today.
Oh, that's right.
I hope we beat that by 3 hours.
Okay.
Me too.
All right.
Fire on.
All right. Any other additions to the agenda? Great. We have an agenda. Any comments on minutes from the month of May FPAW meeting? Great. I appreciate the review and all of those, and those meetings minutes are now approved. Thanks. All right, we'll move to action items. Portland District, gantry, crane.
The gantry 7 outage. So that's the coordination has been completed. BPA did agree with the outage as it was coordinated, and that will move forward for 2012.
You know, if I don't say anything, I'll have to do the minutes, right?
I think in this group, silence equals consent. So, all right.
Yeah, we just need to stay. I mean, I know Tammy's going to stay engaged with it, you know, making sure we continually update you on how things are moving forward or getting ready to move forward. Everybody's ready, right, Tammy?
Well, of course. That's it. Moving on.
Okay. Good. Walla Walla action items. McNary bypass. We talked about this last month. This is going to a carryover item, but we don't intend to really have any new information until August, as the folks that are on that project are scrambling on outfalls. So, Lomo spill patterns. This is just to capture the fact that last month, Bill, we talked about. A change form that needs to be developed next winter after a trip to Urtic to look at replacement of the two existing patterns with a new pattern. So an Urtic trip scheduled. Steve Richards, you're on the phone?
I thought he said he was.
All right. Steve emailed Bill and I just expressing interest in attending. Certainly, you know, the just like happened for the Little Goose trip that you went on, I'd say as long as your agency's on board, we'd love to have you join us. So, okay, moving on to Lomo RSW. Again, last month we kicked this to August. There's a few hotter items on the being worked on right now, but this is an item that we didn't want to lose, and so. We will be bringing that back later this summer to look at how to revise our RSW standard operating procedures so that we appropriately remove debris before reattaching the RSW and putting it into its operating position. We've had a few instances now where RSWs were rocked back in the resting position, then reattached, and when they were reattached, debris was caught in between the RSW and the dam, creating a very poor seal, which results in lots of problems, vibrations, and so tightening up that SOP so we avoid that debris getting stuck. And no update now, but later this summer. James Gale is a great contact on that. This is actually. Pelican issue is one that we'll discuss under updates, so I'll discuss it there. And Little Goose transformer, and we'll investigate the potential for an emergency closure during this work. This is.
Yeah, I need to follow up again. I did forward it on, and that got forwarded to someone else, and I haven't heard back.
Okay.
If I can interject here, what I found out talking to Glenn Mendel, the biologist for the region, the state biologist for the region, he is the one that coordinates any outages, closures at fishing and that thing, especially at the wall at Little Goose. and he is the one that we contact all the time. Fortunately, or unfortunately, at the time when Little Goose had this situation last month, there was a fishing closure at that location, so there wasn't any fishing going on. However, Memorial Day weekend, they wanted to open it up, and you know, he and I talked a little bit about it. Glenn and I talked a little bit about it. He's the one, but they opened it up anyway for that weekend, mm-hmm. and it's continuing. It's yeah.
And this was specifically for August.
Yeah, well, see, it was going to be for August, but we had an emergency. Emergency operation to close down the power plant, that's why.
What's his name?
Glenn Mendel, out of Dayton.
The point is here, when operations are such that things are outside of our control, like they were just last week when we're spilling 100% of the river, we weren't delaying adults as much as we thought we could have been, but I think the point of this discussion is when our operations are having an unavoidable negative impact on adult fish passage, there's a desire to give the fish a little break as they're trying to find the adult fishway entrance and not have happen like we did a couple times last year when we knew adults were being delayed and we had like thousands of fishing lines in the water. And I think that's the kind of thing that there's an interest in exploring ways that we can reduce that impact on adult fish that are due to operational constraints or having a hard time finding the adult. So I think that's the big picture issue here, and would like to, you know, have something in place that if and when that that reoccurs, we have kind of a process worked out that we can say, hey, we're experiencing this issue again. Let's look at some options.
Yeah, what we can do is just talk about that.
So
Glenn Mendel.
If this happens again and the fishery's not closed, could you let me know about that?
Glenn Mendel is the guy that
Glenn Mendel needs.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's good to know.
He needs a day notice.
I know Glenn, and I can call him up.
Yeah, he just needs a day notice.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Last Walla Walla action item is Ice Harbor unit priority, and we're talking about it later in the agenda. We won't talk about it right now. Moving on to updates. Walla Walla updates. Number one, cooling water strainer. That cooling water strainer report can be found online, and I don't think there's anything of note. I don't have it actually sitting in front of me today. I know. But you can find it online, and we'll end it there. Gary, did you want to talk more about that?
No, I...
Okay.
Gary probably misses not having it.
I guess it's time to think, like an hour or two to read the agenda.
Right.
Snooze. And
all right.
Frustrated.
Transportation update. Just kind of overall. There's been a lot of things that have happened this spring that have limited our ability to transport. Obviously, we had the Dalles Navlock outage. That resulted in the decision to stop all transport operations. That lasted for 4 days. So that was 4 days when we would have been transporting, but we didn't. Then we've also had, I believe, one time earlier this spring where we had flows that were consistently over 200. Because of that, we couldn't transport. From Granite or from Lower Monumental. We still were able to transport during those days from Little Goose because of that protection from behind the peninsula where you load the barge. And overall, yesterday was very... we were pushing the upper limits of transport. Yesterday, average flows on the Snake were over 200. We were able to... ramp up flows a little bit before the barge loading occurred so that we could hold back a little bit of water during the barge loading process. I mean, within our mop operations. So, and we're talking a very little space, but so that actually when the hour of barge transit and barge loading flows out of Lower Granite, we're about 195 instead of the 205, 208 that they would have been. So we were able to load a barge yesterday, but it was very close. You know, a couple more KCFS, and it would have resulted in putting fish back to the river.
Is this a tail race related elevation issue, or turbulence, or velocity, or what's the?
It's several things. One is it's difficult to get a barge in safely to the loading. So that's turbulence. You get a lot of currents going, especially with spill. So just hard to navigate a barge in there with that amount of flow and that amount of spill.
Surprised you saw any difference with 10K different.
Yeah, it actually it does make a difference. You know, even we were just talking on the way here. Even when over Memorial Day, when flows were closer to like 178, 179 in that range, because power demand was low, less water was going through the powerhouse and more was going over the spillway, involuntary spill, and even that made it very difficult for the barge to get in, even at one upper 170s. So there's lots of different variables when it comes to getting that barge in there, and once it's there, if it's just rocking and rolling really, that can limit the ability to transport. So that's why during barge loading, everything was done to make it the process as fast as possible. So we got a barge to transit across and to load all in about an hour at Granite, which is quite remarkable. So those are and then a third issue is the boom that loads fish onto the barge. When this was even true at Goose, where we typically don't have a problem, but with these flows, the tail race elevation is up, and because of that, the slope is not dramatic as it normally is. And so we're getting close to a flat boom, which that would preclude transport. Everything, we were still able to do it yesterday, but the bottom line here is when we get above 200, it's very difficult.
Yeah. So when you guys made that reduction in total flow, did you make that reduction with the spillway or with the powerhouse or both?
We were always spilling the amount that we had to spill under the
five. Right.
And when they made that space, I think it was just an overall, a very small reduction in total flows. So taking some of the involuntary spill that would have gone over the spillway and some of the powerhouse flows and allowing that to you build up to about a foot, you know, within your mop constraints.
Right.
So it's very narrow. But, I mean, we have so much water right now that, you know, like at Little Goose, we're supposed to be at 30% spill. We're consistently at like 45% spill. I mean, it's not even really getting close to.
You must have passed that through the spillway because your units are maxed out, so you would have increased spill by a certain amount to get that hole.
Right.
To drop a foot or whatever in the forebay.
Well.
And then hold it back.
And then hold it back for that hour. Right. Yeah.
I was just more curious because of the powerhouse, if you went down to that lower 1% of the operating range. And
no, we didn't have to. Right now, the powerhouse is maxed out, and so really the only real room is in the spillway.
Are you over 120 gas?
Well, Tim,
close.
You know how important transport is to NOAA Fisheries.
Mm-hmm.
So I really, really commend you for doing all you can to keep it going at 200 KCFS in the river. However, I don't think the fish are going to suffer too much by being left in the river when it's that high and that cold.
Yeah.
Well said. Well said. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And, no, and
I probably wouldn't have said it quite so well.
I mean, actually,
what are you doing that for?
Actually, why risk barges and everything? You know, don't go to any risks. Well, when you're up this high a river,
yeah, I mean, the
to transport
cranking.
Fish, because it the fish will probably be down faster downstream than the barge will.
What's the composition at Granite right now?
About 50-50. 50% subs and 50% steelhead.
Okay, quite a few. What's 50-50 of good numbers?
Do you remember, John, when we loaded?
Right now it's like 20,000 at Granite.
Low.
So low. It's so
should be low.
Not big numbers, no.
Yeah. So it's kind of don't kill yourself.
So if this week it went down from 40,000 down to 20, and that I don't think they got into the teens, but they're in the 20 to 40 range right now.
This is an estimate based on the index, or this is an actual count.
Well, that's the 2 days worth of fish. So
count. How do you guys count that? Is that a,
an index?
It's the index.
Yeah,
so because they're barging every other day, so.
Yeah, it's an index.
With that much flow, spill flow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway.
Hey, guys, I'm looking at the Fashion Center report on the index counts. And, yeah, steelhead have been around 12, 13,000 for a few days. Sub-yearlings around 20,000. And yearlings about 1,000.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks, Russ.
Hey, Russ, you're breaking up real a lot.
He's on re-entry.
Yeah, sometimes it's been raining over here. We get water in our lines in our old building.
I'm not used to that.
Yeah, no. It's normally not that way, but yeah, it's been a rough spring that way.
All right. Oh, boy.
Jim, what you're talking about there, reducing flows for barge transportation, was that only for Lower Granite or other facilities as well?
No, it was for... When I say this, it's all within the constraint. I mean, it's within very narrow constraints, so it's not like we're creating a big hole. But that was done at Granite and at Lomo.
Okay, on 1900 hours yesterday, I see a reduction of flow of 224 KCFS down to 146 in one hourly period, which reduced... Still, it looks like from 108 to about 34. So it seems like there were some pretty big changes actually happening there. If those figures are right.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly how they calculated that, if that was an instantaneous or an hour average, but hour average. So yeah, during that hour to get a barge safely across the Lomo tail race, just for the sake of safe navigation, you have to do that to get that eddy to calm down, at least for a few minutes, to get that barge across.
All the way down to 140, did you say? Or what was the river at Q?
1.46 KC. Well, 146.6.
I'd say the only concern would be if you're causing gas levels to go up by spilling more to vacate the hole. That would be an issue.
Yeah.
That you want to at least make better than 20. Or turbine efficiency operations.
You probably aren't at the current close. I mean, it's pretty flat.
I didn't look at Granite today, but it's the rest of the river. I mean, McNary is really bad right now. That's important.
So I guess we have to look at gas levels.
We're approaching 140% in the area.
Look at gas levels during the same period, just right afterwards, and see if they peak.
Yeah.
Forby or Tail Race?
Tail Race. McNary. Tail Race.
So, anyway, that's, overall, for Lower Granite this year, we've transported about 3.4 million juvenile fish. In 2010, this time we had transported about 3.2 million, so a couple hundred thousand less fish transported at Granite this year compared to last year, but within the same ballpark. 2009 was 3.6 million, so we're in the same ballpark, a little bit less than we have in previous years. So. That's it, the transport update.
3.13 McNary debris. This is just to let people know that this shouldn't really affect anything. Our adult fish counts have continued as planned, so you can continue to use the fish counts online. But because of debris at McNary and concerns of that debris building up on the picket leads at the count windows.
Kind of debris.
Tumbleweeds.
Mostly tumbleweed. There were instances where the project was convinced that if the only way, the only solution we had is to keep running a crane all night to clean that debris, or lift the picket leads at night. And so the project wouldn't, just for safety concerns, didn't want that.
South Shore?
Washington Shore. Didn't want that, the safety issues of operating that equipment in the middle of the night. And so we've had to raise picket leads at the Washington Shore.
Are there pickets on both sides?
Yeah, there are two sets.
Mm-hmm.
So
up and down the street.
So you're leaving one set out then now, probably all the time, because we don't want to trap fish in between picket leads.
They're both up.
And they're staying up.
Only they're all up between 2100 and 2500.
But they both go down then.
They
right?
both go down.
And then you would trap any fish yeah. between them.
Yeah. And then your reports that.
But it happens, because it's happened downriver. So what we've done before then is just leave the upper end out.
Oh, really?
Out.
And then at nighttime, pick up the lower end.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, guys.
Okay.
Yeah.
Lou.
Yes.
Yes.
This is Steve here. Sorry to interrupt. I believe the structure's still in place, but years ago, Brad Eby had cut a hole in the upstream picket and lead near the far wall, so that the fish that got trapped between the picket and lead could exit via that hole.
Okay. Now, big a hole.
Yeah. It's big enough for Chinook to get through. It's off the top of my head, you know, maybe a foot tall by, you know, 6 inches wide. I have to take a measurement. It's been a long time since I've seen that.
By 6 inches?
Yeah, that's that was a deal that they did in McGarren. It's been in place for years.
That's not good.
Yeah, we did a similar thing at the Owls and John Day before, too.
Yeah, I think we talked about that 7 years ago.
How big did you guys put in there?
24 by 24.
That's, so yeah, that makes sense. Okay. 6 by...
I don't think theirs is quite that big.
I think, oh, it might have been a little smaller than that, thinking about it.
Most of the upstream picket leads have a hole like that.
Okay. But your shad won't
trapped. Fish behind
yeah.
I mean, yeah. Well. Oh well.
Yeah, your shad will stay in there.
Yeah, we don't have any shad in there yet, so they're good to go.
That's open all the time.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've closed ours. We've closed ours since that. Well, I don't know.
You closed.
Closed now too.
I don't. We got the new picketed leaves last year. I don't think we have them anymore.
Well, we had it just because we were...
I don't recall seeing any holes in the John Day.
I think we had instances when we suspected that fish were entering downstream or upstream.
Well, yeah, I just saw those this year. I didn't see any holes in those at all. I was just standing by them. so, Ed, not all of them.
Not all of them
do, and I... A 6 by 12 inch hole is not big enough for salmon to get
well,
out of there. If you trap in a big
12.
What?
16 by 12.
Oh, by about 12 to 16 inches wide.
You know, bottom line.
Steve, did you say 16?
Yes.
Okay.
About 15. Don't write that down, but you ask Bobby Johnson to take a measurement to see if it's still there. But unless they close it off or replace their picket and lead, it should still be in place.
Well, let's confirm that.
Yeah. Bottom line, we'll send out an email update on this.
Okay. Well, the point is, let's make sure that we don't trap fish in there
yeah.
for periods of time. I mean, that if you're doing it, either there needs to be a hole or you need to leave them up.
Yep.
Or at least one of the panels.
Okay. Got it. Okay. We'll update you guys on this, but I want to let you know that because of the debris issues
yeah,
that was
problems.
Having, we did have to raise those. So.
Oh, boy.
we'll keep you posted on that. Okay, update 3.14 is unit 7. And I guess I'll just kind of back up here. There was unit 7 is out of service at McNairy. And there was a plan to take unit 10 out of service for a rewind. We kind of stuck our heads in there and said, hey, you couldn't pick a worse time to take a unit out of service. And so bottom line there, we're pushing back the rewind of unit 10 until unit 7, which is currently out of service, until unit 7 is returned to service.
Date for that?
June 22nd is the anticipated date right now.
So like I said, your gas levels right now are the highest in the river, or at least as high as Cooley.
Not that high.
Just about. Well, Cooley's 145. This is 140. So.
That McNairy?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Check it out.
Yeah. Well, it's like 1%.
It's incredible. Well, yeah, except that gives us not a lot, but gives us another K per unit.
50K, it's also 45.
It's it was 100 and just shy of 140 this morning and yesterday too, and it was running around 130. It popped up, gas or spill levels went up to 360 plus in McNairy from like 320, and that jumped the gas a bunch. So we're over topping the deflectors and we're plunging pretty hard. And we're not seeing a lot of gas signs in the river right now, but I anticipate at 140 we will.
Yeah. So
when do we want to discuss it outside 1%?
Well, I see it's on the agenda, and I think everybody's geared up for it. I know, the same thing.
But Mary is a big
over my dead
a big
body.
Flow there.
That's what I keep hearing.
It's like 40K there.
Yeah, it depends on where you go to. If you go to 16, or I think the recommendation was to go to 13.3, which is only 1K.
Yeah, it doesn't make as much, but you can go much more than that.
You could go up to 16.6 or somewhere in there. 16.
So, bottom line for this update is we kind of stuck our neck out a little bit to say this rewind has got to be delayed.
Well, you have. The Corps in general needs to recognize that if you can do anything to keep gas levels down right now, these are killer levels of gas. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see adult salmon start having some serious problems here at this. So, you know, we don't have that much of Cooley going on, but we certainly do hear all those fish go through here. And they got to go through, you know, the Chief Joe, too. So.
Yeah.
Okay. The high gas levels just trigger something. Are we seeing an increase in heparin? Results?
I haven't heard anything.
Are the counters watching? I mean, traditionally we get, isn't that right, Gary? When we get high spill years, when we get a lot of gas in the river, we get a lot of heparin.
It was never identified as a gas issue, but that was what people kept saying. That was never confirmed.
Perhaps, Ann, Steve, do you guys have any? Greg?
No.
Anecdotally,
I haven't noticed.
It's
not something
we're
specifically
looking for
right
now.
Right, but it usually shows
up in spades.
We don't know what caused that head burn.
Yeah, I know, but it was, it was kind of those years when we did a lot of the big spill and whatnot. I don't know.
And the only information I have on this was. And I was going to get into this under 3.19, which is the little goose powerhouse, just, it's back in service. When that went back in service, I'm jumping ahead, but bottom line is that went in service about a few minutes after 3 p.m. in the afternoon, last week. And when that happened, I've been talking about how, hey, adult fish passage at Little Goose is actually not looking nearly as bad as we thought it was going to look. We're getting a lot of fish to pass. We did see, and you might have noticed this on the adult fish counts, at the time at 3 o'clock when fish numbers would typically be dropping off, when the powerhouse returned to service, we had over 4,000 Chinook pass goose over the next couple hours. Well, so,
I need to take a look at that because a lot of fish had passed that morning too. Before
I have the numbers.
I
know.
No,
that.
So all 4,000 fish came in 3.
Well, I have the numbers in front of me right now. We were averaging about roughly 100 fish an hour at Goose, and then the powerhouse went back online, and then for a few hours we were averaging over 1,000 Chinook an hour for 3 to 4 hours. So there was clearly a response that, you know, like
I also noticed though on those counts when you guys first shut down the powerhouse, the counts went up for the first 2 days. So, you know, it's like it could be coincidental.
I don't know. To me, I'll be the first to say I thought adult fish counts at Granite or at Goose were going to be a lot worse off than they actually were. So, bottom line here, they were much better than I was anticipating. But I think it's very clear that, I mean, we had averaging about 100 fish an hour, and all of a sudden the powerhouse goes back in service, and boom, we've got 3 hours in a row over 1,000. I think
that's a response.
That's a response.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's arguing with you.
Right, but getting back to what you were, what I was going here, Ed, was I asked Darren Ogden at the adult fish trap at Granite, said, hey, you know, hey, and I was up there the day after we put the powerhouse back in service, and said, hey, expect a pulse of fish, you know, either later today or tomorrow.
Is he trapping?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I asked him specifically, I said, I'd be really curious to get a report from you on condition of these fish, that this 4,000 fish that just pulsed through Goose, high gas levels, what are they going to look like? And the report back was, they look great. They're bright. There's no sign of stress. Like years before, we've seen fish reports of darker color, just kind of.
I remember that was also in the summer. That wasn't spring.
Yeah. So, for what it's worth, anecdotally, from Darren, all the fish they got in the fish trap that pulsed through looked really good.
With high gas levels. It was never identified as a gas issue. I don't know what the problem was. If there was a mechanical thing that we've since fixed and addressed, or if it was gate openings on the spillways and it's fallback, we've reduced our fallback. We learned a lot more about fallback. We don't go with small gate settings like we used to in the spillways. We've increased those to 2 feet or greater. So there's a lot of things we've done that seem to have, that thing seems to have disappeared.
So we can end that subcommittee now.
Yeah. Well, if you want to have a meeting, Ed, go ahead.
Officially ended. I think we made a notebook. I think that was our.
Nothing's officially ended.
I don't think it ever was officially ended, though. You're right.
I don't know.
Now it's official.
Once it's on the FPOM books, it's always on.
I don't think it's on the website, so it may not even exist.
Okay. Steve?
That was 10 years ago.
Tim?
Yeah.
Yeah, Steve Richards here?
Yeah, Steve.
Yeah, Steph, the Wawa distance tracks Headburn. The report's at the comment section of the daily electronic count form. So John Dalen should be able to provide that information. Anecdotally, yeah, we're seeing more signs of Headburns now than we were earlier. But unless you can actually look at the numbers, the rate, I have no idea because we're looking at a lot of fish. We primarily see it on large adults, not so much the jacks at all. And like Darren had mentioned to you, you know, I was up there looking at fish too shortly after this. And yeah, they all look pretty normal as far as we're not getting any old boots, but it is early in the year to have, you know, mature looking fish swimming around.
Yeah.
Regarding headburns also, way back in the day we looked at this and you know, we found headburns in coho as well. And at the time when we found headburns in coho, we weren't spilling at all.
No.
Yeah. So that's just some...
No, there's, yeah. There that's the thing. That's why
Thanks, Steve.
Yeah. Triggered a memory there. That was all. Yeah, this is the kind of year you would see it.
Was that Russ?
Yeah, I'm trying
or other way. Among the front, I'm saying, hold on a second.
Try yourself.
Sounds like he's on the moon. Yeah. Hopefully this will be better.
Oh, yeah.
He's re-entering.
Can you hear me now?
Great.
Came through the
atmosphere. Yeah, this stuff about, you know, the little goose adult passage issue, you know, I think this clearly indicates that we need a study that really gets in there and evaluates and tries to figure out what conditions delay adults and what options we have to provide good conditions for juveniles and adults at Little Goose Dam. And because, you know, we have adult passage in pretty good numbers with high gas and 100% spill. And yes, we got a response when we put the powerless back online. But as you know, part of our concern was in 2005, we had turbines out, primary turbines out at the same time we were delaying adults when we thought it was the gap from spill that, or the pattern from spill that was delaying adults. So we're doing different patterns. Got a lot of information. I think we need a study to really figure out what conditions delay adults and what we can do to get them to pass. And that includes, we need, you know, some way to figure out which ladder they're actually using there.
Which entrance?
During these different conditions. Yeah, which entrance to the ladder they're using there. Mm-hmm. Because when we were down there looking at the model, that was one of the things we didn't know. We were guessing as far as which ladders they'd be using under what conditions. So I think this clearly points that we need a real good, intense effort to come up with a study to try to figure out where the adults are entering the ladder, under what conditions, and what are real options we can do to provide good juvenile and adult passage conditions there.
Yeah, Bill, mm-hmm. Agree?
Yes, I do, and I was just thinking we need to, Greg and I probably need to get the team back together and look at the data from this year that we have, from the conditions that we had this year, and look at it first, kind of dry lab it and see how it fits into what we found out last year, and maybe it'll be another trip in the fall to look at the model again. I'm certainly game. It's very interesting puzzle for me because I thought we kind of had made progress on it last year quite a bit, but this confuses things again because I was like you. I was expecting a total shutdown of passage when we went to that 100%.
Yeah.
Because that I can just see it creates more mm-hmm. eddies than any other condition that we've looked at in the model.
Yeah.
There's no way.
No,
100% spill was spread out amongst the spill base.
Sure.
And in the past, when we've had real chronic delay problems, that spill was focused on the most southern spill base. You know, this year we ran that spill out of the was it spill bay 6?
Yeah.
The very far north one.
Yeah.
Spill bay
eight.
You know, we may not have been passing fish as ideally as if we didn't have any spill at all. But when the powerhouse was operating prior to the big, you know, shutdown, I think that north spill kept fish running pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay. I guarantee if we would have the north spill off this year, we wouldn't have passed the fishes. We wouldn't have passed 1,000 fish a day like the way we were.
And one thing we've seen when we took the weir out of service last year, when we went to a uniform pattern, we passed a lot of adults. Well, this powerhouse outage, we had a uniform pattern, essentially. It was just
we did.
Yeah.
Just a lot.
There's a lot of it. So, Russ, I agree that you know, it would be interesting. The more you look at this issue of adult passage at Goose, the more you realize we're still kind of in the dark on some of this. And so I think SRWG is probably the place to make sure we're framing up the right study to address that.
Has anybody asked U of I to provide some of the results from their telemetry work that they've done? I know it was probably different operations.
They have
you might be able to glean some info.
They have their 2008 adult passage report using their that was a telemetry study.
Is that on
Little Goose?
Yeah, it was on Little Goose. Problem is, it had some operations that were trying to replicate what a spillbay weir would look like, but we didn't have a weir in place then. We had three different treatments, and it was odd because we were implementing operations that we thought would be delaying adults, and it didn't really delay adults. And so although it was somewhat interesting, it didn't really shed a lot of light because we never really got adult delays. When in other years, like last year, and at times a little bit this year and a couple years ago, we know we were delaying adults. It was just odd that the year we did the study, despite our best efforts, we couldn't delay adults.
Well, it's because you're probably swapping that treatments out.
Yeah.
And when you're swapping out treatments, you're setting up different hydraulic conditions that allow fish to move through and those back up.
Right. That's right.
Tailwater may make a difference.
So
how about, Tim, how about a subcommittee?
Oh, Lord, not another one.
I know. We got way too many of them, but I mean, that's, is there a better idea? I mean, we need a few people to, Russ and Steve and Tom and me and Greg, to just see where we go on this.
Absolutely. Well, we need to get SWG to get a study so we get some information on this.
I'm thinking about, SRWG, but what operations? What do we want to look at the model and how, with this new information?
I think the next step.
Do we want to mess with the spill pattern that we worked on last winter?
I'm just saying, I think you guys have the spill pattern problems where we have kind of an abnormal year, so we're not really getting a fair test of it.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, 100% spill, that's not something to plan on. 220, 180 in the river, that's right. Not something to plan on. You probably have adult passage delay just due to the fact that you have high turbidity, high flows.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So that's going to confound everything you're doing.
Right.
You're not going to be able to get a clean test from, or a good knowledge from that, because you have so many confounding variables. I would almost say, let's let it run, maybe get a normal year next year. We're talking to doing RT soon. And we have some ideas. Like if we said we start sawing passage stops, that kind of stuff, there's things you can do. You can look at maybe going to the uniform pattern for a day or two, that kind of stuff. That was, I think.
Mm-hmm. What's your hypothesis? What's your hypothesis? I mean, develop hypothesis. That's what you could do in this committee.
Yep.
Is because it's not going to be what do we do when we're out of control. It's going to be what, you know, the 30% is the issue. So that's, you know, you're trying to determine how you can best deal with that spill level or exceed it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the group did down in Hurt. I think they came up with a new pattern.
You may already have that, and you're just waiting to test it.
But we actually have conditions
In control type of year, which is what we don't have.
Right.
So then, do you need a committee? But if you,
we should be in control by July 20th. So maybe we'll meet for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there have been some problems seen in July.
Yeah.
So I think the next step on this is at least when we get back to Walla Walla, we can talk to, I guess, Derek Fryer, and bring this into the SRWG arena. Okay. And when we do that, then we can work in that forum to get the right folks putting thoughts together to make sure we're getting the right output from that SRWG process. Nice. So
were you thinking of putting together a group of FPOM folks? Because that's who would do this. It wouldn't be an SRWG.
Is there a current one-pager for this? That project?
There was a one pager for some Snake River adult studies. Yeah. I don't know if they were specific to this.
I don't think it's going to adequately address this.
No,
so I think the bottom line is we should take an effort. And Greg, this will be a good little project where we can just get a one pager.
Oh, another opportunity.
It's an opportunity.
How's this development team?
How he's looking at that. He's
disappearing.
Amazing how
the manure spreader is.
It's going to be flopping outside. Take it.
Put together a draft run one pager. Working with Tom, Russ, Bill, anyone else that would like to be included in that process?
I nominate Trevor to be on that one, too.
To get a draft one-pager from with FPOM representation kicked into the SRWG arena. I agree. It's really an FPALM question that'll be addressed through the SRWG process.
The hypothesis should come from FPALM. Yep. Take it to SRWG and figure out how to do it.
We got it. Yeah.
So
that should be doable.
Greg will be your point of contact in that. He'll excel in that role.
He's a dumb guy.
Get out of here.
Sound good, Russ? I'll take that as a yes.
Yeah, thanks, Phil.
All right. Thanks, Russ. Doug?
But before we get off this subject, I guess I don't know, Gary, if this would be to you or to Ann, but it was nice to get that update and information from Steve on high flows, high gas, and fish response. Are we getting anything out of the PUDs? I mean, I know there's the FPC for juveniles. We're seeing the high numbers there, but are you guys getting any reports on adults or juveniles that were not? I mean, from the information I've seen mostly now, it's just juveniles, GBT.
We're seeing Rock Island, you know, percentages that are
but
40%.
What about wells? Like, what are they doing? What happens as far as monitoring or... There's none?
No.
Well, not for children, just asking for adults.
For adults, or... I guess when I'm just wondering adults. What NOAA or Washington is doing.
Tell us about adult counting.
For adult counting.
Oh, well, counting, but there's no gas bubble disease monitoring of adults. Anywhere in the system.
But as far as the observations are going, I mean, is there anything coming back, I guess? Because we're hearing it on the federal side for snake projects, but
I don't know
I'm
if
not,
there's...
It's a vacuum as far as...
They're having the same issues. I think NOAA needs their HCPs
back. Okay.
The gas levels haven't been that high down below, but it's been... The problem has been from Chief Joe, and then was actually from Cooley passing through Chief Joe
right.
to Rock Island, and then done down, it hasn't been that bad, but... So, whether you'd see a problem, probably not until you got up in the Okanagan or something.
If there's anything that's coming out, because
I haven't heard anything. I haven't heard anything. I just don't know that you would see it.
Okay.
But Garrett,
you can make no assumptions because that's a whole separate process. The HCPs, the Mekonis have their own separate process.
Right. But we're not hearing anything. I guess I'm just concerned because we're not hearing anything.
There's the MCC committee, the Mekonis committee. That's where the information will be distributed through that.
I haven't heard anything except what we've seen for the Rock Island
and
smolt.
The 60% numbers, the sky.
Some of the things we'll talk about. Cooley is really high, but Chief is actually stripping out most of the gas.
Wells is your problem child.
Wells is the problem child. They're trying
Chief
to move.
Chief is passing the powerhouse side and is stripping the spillway side. It
right.
is, I know.
So you're getting about 3-4% added on by the powerhouse, but you're stripping it down to 116 through the spillway. It's coming in at 134.
Yeah.
So Chief is really doing a yeoman's job of getting it back.
Well, it is. I'm
Wells
not
is having the issues. The way they're stacking it up, they got some equipment problems.
I'm not pointing.
The other thing is they're also really stuck on keeping with their spill patterns that they agreed to in their agreements.
HCPs.
And so I was driving up there Sunday and noticed they have half their spill bays off at Rocky Beach.
Yeah.
So I talked to them the other day. They're looking at changing that and opening
what,
them up.
What, Chelan's? Shocking.
Yeah.
To go to a more uniform pattern?
To go to a more uniform pattern. We talked to them. They're all looking at ways.
Spill more water.
Well, they don't really have to spill any more. They just have to change it. But they're really stuck on what they'd agree with you guys. And so...
So whoever developed pattern didn't think about gas as they went up.
Those patterns weren't for gas or anything like that. It's a minimal pattern to pass some.
Very.
What's happened as you went up?
Some of that
nobody thought about that?
Because remember, the spillway is ineffective.
Who's working on this thing?
Absolutely ineffective at Rocky Reef. You have to spill too much water to make it.
The other concern they've had is that adult rocking adult passes. And so I asked them if they could look at night and day different patterns.
And we stepped back 20 years.
You're the ones who signed the HCP. You guys
I didn't sign it.
You signed it. You signed it.
Which HCP you guys work for again?
That's what I thought you said.
So my guess is they could use...
You signed it.
They could use your support and assistance in modifying some of their patterns.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've been doing that forever in Columbia.
It might be time to talk to them again.
Who's our biologist for those guys anymore?
Is Brian Norland still the Scott?
I don't know.
Brian Norland's the engineer.
Is Scott still that, or has he moved on to other things?
No, I don't think Scott does it.
Yeah, Brian's doing a lot of the day-to-day stuff, but Scott's still overall.
Yeah,
well, I mean,
Brian,
we know how to do it. It's just that it needs to be done.
We don't get
this.
One
sure the fiscal models exist.
Give it a try, guys.
I get Gary if we can get Wellsdale on the phone. He's the guy, because he knows those guys personally that run Chelan PUD.
If we can get him on the phone.
We can get him on the phone.
He won't talk to you.
I said, they're looking at him next week.
Maybe he'll talk to you. But
hey, Gary.
I'm not.
Gary, they're looking at making these modifications and looking at changing their patterns.
Good.
And so you may be getting a phone call somewhere and Noah asking if it's okay.
Yeah,
so
what's in how, you know, if you want to work on how. And we have some general ideas that will apply, I think, to any dam. It's just a matter of
right.
knowing some bathymetry. And
this week they've attempted, they're starting to look around for those kind of reports.
So, I mean, this is really good. Do we think we can get some, at least
we can do better than just
exploratory look at some option? I mean, it seems like we know what would be better than what we have now, it seems like.
Yeah, you don't need a blue jay to tell which way the wind blows, right?
So,
is that the notes, Tammy? I want a recording of that.
You know? I'm just going to leave, Bill. You got this covered.
So, can we put this down as an action item that
Noah
Fisheries will explore options working with Mid-Sea?
No, I think it's not Noah Fisheries. I mean, I think it's the region. If they're looking for a group of folks to help with pattern development, there's a core of folks who Tom's one. I've spent a lot of time. Bill spent a lot of time. You know, a lot of you guys have spent a lot of time on models working this out. We have some general theories that we can apply. We just need to know some bathymetry, you know.
It's not hard.
No, it's not hard. At least the dry lab.
These projects aren't hard.
It may not be best, but you can dry lab, and then, you know, if you don't have a model, you don't have a model.
But I get that, Gary. There's a whole team of people that can help, but someone needs to make that initial exploratory
action. I believe Noah's the only people here that actually have an official representative on the MCC. That
really?
Would make the thing.
I don't know.
Yeah, we can do it.
Okay. All right. Thanks,
maybe
Bill.
We'll do it now?
Well, no, not yet. We still like having you here, but I think
but follow very quickly.
At 2:45. Today.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's
quick action.
Yeah. All right. Good topic. And now,
as soon as you get our Walla Walla business, I'll go make some calls.
Okay.
I'll see you.
So get cracking.
Okay. Here we go. Buckle up.
I might need to get Bob involved too.
That'll get Chelan moving quickly.
Yeah.
Tell him that we've reinvited Crickfish.
Oh, brother.
All right. I think someone there, we lost our way, and I apologize for that. But we are 3.15, back on track, McNary, TSW removal.
Yes.
And they are out of service. We just took them out yesterday afternoon. And we had to go to an alternative spill pattern for that work to proceed. We should be back in our normal spill pattern with these out of service.
How long has that been going on, that alternative spill pattern?
That can explain that spike in gas.
I was just wondering.
I was wondering why McNary jacked up so much.
I think that is.
10%.
That's it. The work started yesterday, and
how many days did you need? Oh, you need 4 out? Yeah, that
could cause problems. Yeah, because it was yesterday and today that we saw the gas levels jump.
Yeah, when we drove past, we pulled into McNary to look, and they had 4 bays out of service. Anytime you're doing an overwater work, you have to have that bay out and the bay next to it.
Mm-hmm. So, there is more spill, though, too, for whatever reason.
Well, yeah.
Just in the last 2 days.
Yeah.
But is it something to put in our fish pass plan if flows are greater than 300,000, delay the removal of TSWs from service? I mean, if we legitimately saw a 10% spike,
the spill levels over 320,000.
Well, which is what it was.
Right.
But I mean, since we're in this condition, we seem to forget if we don't write it down now. That's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
Should we make the one of our factors for taking them out of service? It's not worth the spike.
Not just the 8th of June,
correct.
But also if
flow below.
I think that's
threshold.
Yeah. Why? You know, you're driving gas levels up, and that's something that
this is
not going to do. Right?
This is a strange.
Well, this is one that was clearly just so you know. I mean, the project had been asking us for weeks. Do we have? Yes, the date is June 8th. Are you sure? We're 100% sure. It's June. Yes. Yeah. And so now that I do think it would be good to
let
capture.
Calm down, and then we'll hit them with another one next year. But when did that start? What hour? Let's take a look at that. The data, the gas data is pretty quick. So
we left it
up to them.
So
I
need to find out.
So they get back to you with the emails of what the times were.
Let's see if this was the cause or if there was something else truly before we run down that road. But If you could let me know when that happened, what hour?
I think, well, I can tell you for a fact that we drove past at 2 o'clock?
No, it was 2:30.
2:30 and they're out. I will get you the date the time.
Yeah, because then I'll try to correlate it with the TRS levels and see if they actually jumped up. Because flow levels were up higher too, and spill level was up like 40, 50K higher.
Whatever it was, if this causes a 10% spike in gas, we should consider delaying.
I agree.
And capture, like I said, definitely we'll have more years like this, but might be a while.
If it happens.
But we might forget.
That's what you're asking, is if we really had wanted to pull the TSWs, I thought you said, oh, we haven't pulled them out yet. Do we want to pull them out? I was going to suggest we wait, but
yeah. They sent it out for coordination, so I mean, you had to
email. Yeah, and because once this thing gets wrapped into the FOP,
I know.
Unless we have some language in there that says they'll come out on June 8, or and if flows happen, or if flows are above whatever 300, the removal will be delayed until flows drop below 300, something like that.
Right.
But once it's in the FOP. It's,
well,
I mean,
it's done. This year's done. Yeah. So yeah. Next year, though, the FOP can be changed if there is
we'll
a FOP.
Change, thanks.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Are you going to do that before you
leave? Change form.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll do that change form.
Thank you,
all right.
No change form yet.
3.16, just a quick update. Ice Harbor STS inspections. Tried to do them at the end of May. And water turbidity was so high, there was no chance for them to. They couldn't see anything, and so I think we sent an email out on this. We'll do them sometime in June, as soon as conditions allow. My guess is it's going to be a couple weeks down the road.
We'll have the same problem in Chandler.
Yeah. So. All right. 3.17. Ice Harbor Unit 3 and 4. This is just more interesting, but Unit 3 and 4 went offline for about, I think, like 45 minutes. And it was project folks saw, we've heard two different reports from different people. Some people say it was an osprey, some people say it was a crow. That flew out of a tower, and there was a puff of smoke when they flew out, and it somehow shorted that out, which
puff
tripped
feathers. Too.
Wow. I can see how they could that's confuse the two because one's more that, white, and then one's
that was, that
black.
Was
after the smoke. It was black
after
the
smoke.
Right.
It was black.
The puff of smoke threw them.
It's all black now.
Must have been a crow.
This has been in a cartoon, kind of a Wile E. Coyote cartoon, you know?
Right.
So, Acme Bomb.
Yeah. So when that happened, that tripped the units offline, which then increased spill from like 75K up to 100K.
Aww, really? That's too bad. One bird?
Yeah.
A bird?
A bird.
That's wrong.
And
one of those birds?
Yeah. We bring the eagles in.
Yeah, it's probably a California condor.
The crows, though.
Crows.
And it also, in the process of tripping that line, it tripped the fish pumps off, and they stayed off for about a day. So there was
a big butt.
It was.
Man.
So everything's back online now. It's fine, but it was just interesting that
talk
one
about avian problems. Huh?
Bird and a puff of smoke kicked units off for, and kicked off the fish
entire powerhouse.
It's better than that squirrel that took down the Dell. So
God, that was a big squirrel.
What about the bear?
Squirrel.
Big as a buffalo.
All right.
Or even the bear.
Moving on. 3.18 Lomo. Just an up your monthly Pelican update.
Up your Pelican update.
The black Pelicans.
Yeah, we figured out how to short some units out. And
Pelicans can do.
No. So we did institute 24-hour hazing. But I can tell you, 24-hour hazing stopped June 2nd, and the reason it stopped is because we were doing 24-hour hazing and there were no birds around anymore. Okay. So that's the good news, is 24-hour hazing continued until the problem was gone. You know, we'll keep you posted on it. We've obviously have people there watching this. If we have to go back to it, we will. But right now, we've stopped.
So do we need to put a change form in about that for next year, or put it in the plan somehow saying go to more aggressive hazing as needed as birds become more prevalent? Is that something we need to put in language? So we don't have to do this delightful email exchange game?
It should be for up and down the river, though, too. Exactly. Any place where we see high problems.
That's what I'm saying. Do we need
that's the point of doing the monitoring.
The Portland contract allows for that already.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want to put it in the FPP,
I don't know.
The contract allows it.
Or just
we certainly could. I don't know that it does. I mean, we've certainly drilled it into our folks that, hey, we need to protect our outfalls. And 24-hour hazing is a tool that we have to use if necessary. And we needed it at Lomo. We used it. I don't know that it's going to, having it in the FPP, I don't know that I would change anything. But we certainly could.
To streamline the process so we don't have to send emails. And granted, with the Lomo moving next year, fingers crossed.
Yeah, I know on the new Loma offall they are putting some very high powered water cannons out there.
Spitzers for the Pelicans?
Yeah.
The shower.
So, Tom, were you thinking of like an avian task force?
God, no, I'm not sending
a task force, you know, in the.
I just want to be sure that
they move around. They like Navy SEALs, you know, they go.
Delta Force?
Yeah, Delta Force.
Yes. High risk response team.
Yeah.
Retired Delta Force guys. Come on.
They're already out there. You guys would love that. They're all a bunch of retired Marines, you know. They're already
guys. Birds are still smart.
A bunch of gunnies out
there. So anyway, we can move on, but the good news there is Pelican.
So, where are they? Where did they go?
Exactly.
They went somewhere. They're McNary's, right?
I was just saying we could call them Gold Team 6 or something.
Can you get control? Lion's very hatchet. He's got to go somewhere. Out they're bothering somebody. These Pelicans.
All right, 3.19.
They're like a teenage group, a teenage gang.
We've really got
out of North Portland.
The Bills.
Grab some more angel food cake, Bill.
You're doing very good.
3.19, Little Goose. We've already talked about the powerhouse being back online. And I already covered the main point I wanted to cover there, which was Adult Passage. Wasn't the other point that I didn't bring out yet was all the work to get the turbine units back online. That was units 1 through 4. The nice thing is, and you'll notice, you probably noticed in the email that we actually got units 1 through 5 back online. And so it was really as painful as that time was and working nonstop to fix that problem. The one piece of good timing was the fact that units 1 through 4 was what the main focus was. But we also had teams working on unit 5 to get that back online, so that when we actually brought units 1 through 4 online, unit five was just ready at the exact same time as units 1 to 4. So when we brought it back online, we could bring all units 1 through 5. Meanwhile, unit 6 is still out of service. But so that was one piece of good news. I expected to send an email saying units 1 to 4 are back online, and it just really good timing in getting units 1 to 5. So, moving on, Little Goose, in part because of the 100% spill, we had a lot of water pouring over the spillway and a lot of water sweeping over that. Little point, that peninsula that sticks out in the north end of the spillway.
Mm-hmm. It used to be there.
And that did a couple things. One, there was a handrail that lined above the adult fish channel there.
Yeah.
Well, now apparently there was a nice, slick, like, algae layer there on top of that. And the handrail was actually no longer on the deck, but it was drooping down, hanging into the adult fishway. So that essentially lassoed that out of there. So it's still hanging, but it's not in the water. And because of the algae, it's really difficult, slippery area to work. So it's a no walking zone right now. We're working to solve it, but at least it was solved enough so that the handrail is no longer touching the water, so there's no impact to fish. It's just a human safety.
Loose from the concrete?
Yeah. From all the spill that was sweeping over that, the top of that.
Debris in there, too.
And so in the process of that, too, there was... on that peninsula that stuck out, on the north end, there was a place you could drive a car and a vehicle. You could park a vehicle down there. It was kind of gravel peninsula area. Well, that is largely eroded away, as you could expect. I mean, if there's enough force to knock out a handrail, there's enough force to erode some of that gravel that was there.
Yeah.
So, bottom line here, I don't have a lot of information because we don't know what the extent of that problem is. Obviously, we're getting adults passing. I'm not overly concerned about the immediate, problem of passing fish. We're passing fish. But this is something that you'll likely hear more about as we learn more about that erosion issue. There's likely going to be some work done sometime, hopefully winter maintenance period. But, John?
I'd like to point out, because it's a restricted area, the fishway inspections won't cover that area. They can do it remotely with electronics.
Mm-hmm. You can't put your ice clippers on and walk down there?
I need ice clippers, wading boots, and drop by steps. It's like in the
BRZ.
Want to come out?
No.
Critics always welcome.
You know? Yeah, be at the office.
We're going to give them a key to the project?
We can work on that.
There's no fence down there, so don't need.
Yeah, you just can't
get to it.
Yeah, easily.
All right, that's the update.
You're trying to get rid of him, aren't you?
Yeah. Slick. Yes.
Yeah, just for you guys' information, when you were at 100% spill, the backheading on the powerhouse short, the waves were splashed up against the powerhouse, so in such force that the water is actually splashing up and over the top where the floating weirs used to be. That's back into the fish channel.
Wow.
New AWS supply.
It was a torrent beyond torrents, you know.
Yeah.
But so the thought that maybe it delayed a few fish, you know, that kind of gives the idea. If you got, you know, what, 8, 10, 12-foot waves splashing up against the front of the dam.
Wow. Yeah. It's impressive.
Going up the stream, that's pretty significant.
Yeah. No, thanks, Steve. 3.111.
Too bad it didn't wash off some of those fishing.
This is typically the time of year where I'd have on the agenda talking about transitioning the little goose weir. We are obviously in the low crest position and probably will be for a while.
Yeah.
And so
I don't think it'll hit 70 for a while.
We haven't talked about this one for a while, but I just wanted to refresh people's memory. We're in the low crest and will be.
To be concerned with that this year.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
And last Walla Walla update. Lower Granite debris spill. We did a debris spill on 17th of May. The only reason I'm bringing this up is it was kind of interesting because there was debris building up and it was kind of backing up behind the RSW. And so it's like, couldn't really see what was going on, but something's weird. So got Rich Hilt from Granite called and just said, hey, we need to do a debris spill. We've got like a couple acres of debris building up and it's building up behind the RSW, not really sure what's going on. So, so we said, and I was like, all right, hey, that sounds odd. Let's get this thing done like in the next hour. So we made some phone calls and sent out an email. What he found were two large trees spanning across the RSW, creating this trash
rack.
Yeah, a debris boom, essentially. So we started this debris spill at 10 a.m., ended it at 11:08, so a little over an hour. In the process, we shut the RSW down for 20 minutes from 10:25 to 10:45. And when they did that, these two big trees floated up to the surface.
So they were below the surface?
Just below the surface.
See them. Just below or down?
Subsurface.
With all that force in the water, I can see you probably pushing them down.
Yeah.
I just wonder about fish condition. I mean, you don't want that happening.
No.
Well, that's the thing.
Which is exactly what, I mean, he noticed it that morning, called us. Okay. We got it. We got the debris spill. He called us at 8 o'clock in the morning. We had a debris spill going on at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we appreciate that. So you guys got logs out of there.
Yeah, and so it was cool. You know, we were able to shut the RSW off for 20 minutes. When they did, that popped the trees up.
Popped it up.
They floated over, and actually they saw them pass down through Spillbay 3.
Yeah.
actually.
Goose now stuck in the goose.
Yeah, Gus. Okay. Yeah, I was thinking that too.
Did they have a bear?
Well, there's no.
And a pelican.
So is this an automatic procedure? Did you have to call a lot of people, or because this shouldn't be allowed to happen right now?
No. I called
Bill and you sent an email out.
Bill and sent an email out, and
that's fine.
That was it. And it was essentially, if I hadn't been able to get a hold of Bill, it was frankly, I was going to leave a voicemail and
do it.
Well, that's why I'm thinking, why not have a change form, another thing in there that says if you see debris build up like that, you just get rid of it.
I think we have,
you're going to say yes.
We have something in there about debris spills anyway. That they're
we
authorized.
Do, but we've had those conversations. Who needs to get notified?
Doug's yeah. Doug's not yeah, here
that's
right
a
now.
Different issue. I think this is where you're actually plugging the RSW or TSW. Mm-hmm. And you know you've got
they didn't
debris
know
stuck
it.
In it.
They didn't know it, but they didn't suspected know. It. And so thank you, Rich, very much for
yeah.
the crew for noticing it and taking care of it
yep.
really quick.
No, yeah, if you have a permit, maybe make a phone call, get a hold of send email out. You
get it
don't
done.
Respond. Not the room anyways. Get it done.
Right. Good. Well, it was...
Do you want to take that long?
No, I'm not saying wait for a response. If you get a hold of it, it's great.
I'm just thinking you could make it automatic if they see that in one of the TSWs, RSWs, and they should be looking. You know, we
right.
don't want this to be, oh, you know, they happen yeah. to see it. You want to have somebody actually look at it maybe three times a day, and if they see it, then they automatically go into
okay, if you want to add that,
clean mode.
Like, ensuring that the RSW does if that's yeah. different, yeah.
I mean, look at it three times a day during these kind of high flow years, and if they see it, they automatically go into a debris
yeah.
flush mode so they get that out of there, because that can be really injurious to fish. I mean, you can see a lot of descaling for fish going
yeah.
through a high velocity area like that.
Yeah, I mean, this is one, I mean, I think it demonstrates the fact that we have eyeballs on that continually through the day. It was... One, I mean, we have fish bios up there. We have Rich Hilt. He has a crew. It was actually one of his crew people that said, hey, we got some weird debris going on. Called Rich. Rich looked at it. Rich called me. I called Bill. I called Doug to say, hey, just we need a teletype to... Doug to get the teletype written. And while the teletype was getting written, then I wrote the email and sent it out to everybody. So I think it worked.
Yeah, but that's I just heard about 10 different names in there that bothers me. I mean, if your biotech or an operator goes out there on a regular basis, sees that, they go and do it. They take care of it. Right
but keep
now.
In mind, this was just about an acre of debris that was starting to build up. That it was the type of thing that normally we would see this and like, all right, well, we'll coordinate a debris spill and do it a couple days later. This was just odd enough that we decided, let's not wait, let's just do this one. And it wasn't like you saw like this gnarly tree hanging out of the water.
No, that's
what Gary's
saying.
I think he's saying if you're seeing debris build up at, say, a surface route,
yeah.
that's something we might want to do.
There shouldn't be debris build up in front of a surface route.
And they noticed
it should never happen.
So
all
I don't,
Gary's trying to do is like maybe just
Just thank them for doing it. And
inspections.
If there's something we can put in the fish pass plan to look for this kind of thing, great. But I think it's covered.
Well,
if you really want to do something about what Gary's talking about, is put a camera, set a camera right up there looking down into the RSW.
This is your primary
24-hour camera, and the people in the ops room can watch that. And
you know, I don't. Yeah.
They're that still going to have to contact Doug at RCC for the teletype because the operators won't do anything on their own.
Then they can make that call directly. But what I heard was the chain of events of. Several people, several calls and emails and all this stuff. And in the meantime, every second you've got fish could be getting strained through.
Well, no, it wasn't that way. I mean, he saw it about an hour before he called me. I mean, he heard about it. But, I mean, it went fast. And I said, you don't even need to call me in a situation like that. Go
right.
do it. Get out there. If I was there, I would have gone out and helped you do it. So
that's all well and good, but what I'm trying to get at is having that automatic in there, because you would automatically say that. So why does
right.
he have to call you to automatically get a response instead of just?
I think actually my
it's the
my,
bigger debris spill too.
I understand that one. That's a different issue.
I actually think my actual order of events was I got the call from Rich. I'm like, we need to jump on this now. I called Doug so that Doug could issue the teletype out to the project, and while that was working. I gave Bill a call and wrote an AFPALM email But it was really, I mean, the train was moving.
All of that's after you got a hold of it, though. And what I'm worried about is those guys out on the project, that FPP's for those guys, mm-hmm. when they see it. You know, it's more, gives them guidance on something that we know shouldn't be happening. We shouldn't have a debris plug in front of a TSP.
I think they already know that. I apologize.
Can I interject real quick? I apologize because I was just out. I missed the start of this conversation. But I guess what I'm struggling a bit because what I'm hearing correctly from what I've just heard is that folks would like to have greater response time when we start seeing debris and issue. Is that correct? Did I just hear that? Is that kind of what I just gleaned?
Less response.
No, this is a plug of a surface route. And if we're not responding fast enough,
right,
by people going out there and you know, observing it once an hour, then we need to put up some cameras watch it 24 hours.
I really need to finish this one because I'm a little fired up right now. Because last year we had a similar situation.
This is very different. This is not a whole bunch of debris setting out in the forebay that you want to pass downstream.
Okay.
This is a plug of the most important route at the project.
Yes. Okay. So you're talking
specific.
About it, right?
This is almost like in a bypass system, when you get a whole slug of screwed up dead fish,
right.
the guys act right away, there's a plugged orifice, there's something going on,
here
and they jump on
that.
This is a lot even more important than that. You gotta just take care of it right away because you're not even going to see those dead
fish. You won't see it. You won't know it.
You guys did a great job. We're trying to figure out a way to ensure that that great job is the norm.
Right.
And it sounds like you had a bunch of guys saying, oh, I see a problem. We called Tim. Tim then said, hey, let's make the call and do it. We're just trying to say, like, let's make it so you have someone who makes sure there's not debris in front of your service spot, their service route. If there is, then immediately you need to call Doug, you get your channel type, you get it done. Just have more of a streamlined process. You guys did great. We're starting to memorialize that.
I wouldn't have expected this to have happened.
I know.
But the reason it happened is because, and I appreciate your focused effort on explaining why this was different than last year, but I'm just trying to bring to folks' attention. We had these situations last year where I felt like, my perception was, we got a lot of negative feedback at FPOM because what happened was, I'm sitting in my office on a Friday afternoon in the springtime, and guess what?
I got
a bunch of debris.
If you're doing something outside,
it's an item for next time.
I guess I would just like to summarize. I'm getting a lot of side opinions here, but I think the Corps has made in the past a good faith effort to pass debris at projects, and I think that we've gotten some criticism on that because the perception is we're just out there passing a bunch of debris willy nilly, and that's not the case. And so I'm taking this conversation a little to heart because we went through this whole process last year. Based on some concerns that we were somewhat, overly using our discretion to pass debris to basically improve ops all across the board. So I just want to throw that out to folks to think about that it is in the FPP now. We'll continue to have that flexibility, but if there's a more focused approach you'd like, Bill, that's fine. But I guess I appreciate Tim's efforts because I think his robust approach to communication was somewhat of a response last year where I felt like we were a little bit under the gun for doing a better job of coordinating for debris spills. So
the situation
I'd
love to talk to you more about it offline.
Debris accumulation can turn into some other impact.
This is simple.
I don't want to go down that road.
My only point is that when your surface route is plugged, fix it.
And I'm happy
now.
To do that. And I'm
that's
happy to do
as
that.
As quickly as
that's
possible. That's all
do
I'm saying. I don't want to take this to
that's
the forebay or the
that's
next
done.
Dam
okay.
or anything
that's
else.
Good. Can we move on?
Got it. We'll move on. We'll,
you know, what,
that's resolved.
You had a boy. Look what you did.
Whatever I said goes.
Next. All right. So we can look at some language to put in that says if debris is building up behind a surface passage route, it triggers an instant debris spill.
It doesn't have to be coordinated.
It doesn't need to be coordinated. Well, that's
resolved the issue.
Well played.
Resolve the issue.
Okay. All right, we'll.
Yeah, I have yet for Bonneville.
We'll have an FPP change form.
There you go.
To that language. Moving on.
So on
Portland
the
district
Portland
updates.
Update. Hausman is here, so do you have.
I'm going to go home.
Ben, do you have an update on the tie crane?
This is going to get worse.
Thank you.
It's a lot worse.
It is?
You're having some issues putting that new.
Leave. Give me an hour before you get back to what I want this.
Okay.
Okay.
And then the Powerhouse 2 fish screen.
Talk to Mid-Seas.
Okay, good.
How's everything good. Going out there?
I wouldn't put anything back yet, for sure. We're kind of using the fish units as a weird half-ass surrogate, and it's not good. I mean, we're getting, you know, we normally float trash off the fish units at night when we have to. We've had to increase that to do it during the day because they get to 10 or 12 feet of drawdown during the day. So then we're floating one, and it's weird because it doesn't take a long time for it to float off, so I don't know what it is.
That means it's big.
Maybe.
Probably a boat or something.
But, you know, so they don't take it down for a long time, but when they do, of course, then we only have one fish unit for, in instances, for a short time.
Yeah, we need a lot of water through the fit. You know, I mean, AWS demand is pretty high.
Everything's
too.
Maxed out. There's no head on the.
I know. I know.
Yeah.
32-foot tailwater.
That makes your entrance a little taller.
Almost 35.
Yeah,
that's
why that unit was so screwed up when we did
the. I don't know. Just from how fast it was put down on those and the trash racks.
Yeah. Your office was a little wet.
Yeah, I heard a trash rake might help you.
Trash rake would be nice.
Working on that.
We have a PDT forming on that.
We do. We're going out there Monday.
Let's see. After 25 years of working on this one, I'm not so sure I'm
on that. Monday, I thought we were supposed to have a meeting.
Maybe by year 15, I'll get something.
I'll believe it when I see it. We got to just go break a champagne bottle on it. Let's not break it, let's just drink it. Anyway.
But, I mean, river flows are still right at 500. I mean, there's no end in sight for a little while.
They're talking. The last time I saw, the peak was supposed to be like tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's why it's STP.
So it's going to start heading down, but I think there's triggers already established of when they can try to put something back, but we're not close.
No, I mean, I don't know exactly what that is besides us monitoring the other components and see what drawdowns are, but all the VDSs are still in there. They still haven't clogged up.
They haven't clogged. It's interesting that they're actually getting a good number of fish down at the small monitoring facility.
They're almost getting a per sample.
Yeah, I looked at it yesterday, and they had all sizes of fish, a lot of fry, little fry.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. But I don't know. I mean, I don't really know what the threshold is. We'll just keep watching it, I guess.
There you go, Tom. Even,
2 years ago, it wasn't that
it
much.
It screens out of there.
So
don't need them. After all these years of trying to improve those screens, we realized, hey, we don't even need them.
You wouldn't have to twist Bonneville Project's arm too hard. Or mine.
I like the way they look on the deck, actually.
It's a windbreak right there on the crane.
Jade.
All right, so next
the tie crane was what? I missed that.
It's back in service.
It is. Wow.
Well, they're going to check on it, but they think it's back in service.
With a 2-mile-an-hour wind restriction.
Great. And the John Day STS inspections, Mira had already updated you that it's the same issue as Ice Harbor, and they will do their inspection as soon as conditions allow. So moving on into researcher updates.
Didn't you guys poll something at John Day, you said, yeah, there's a fair amount of debris. That was one email notification I saw.
Pulled something at John Day?
I thought maybe it was one of the operators or something like that said they saw a high amount of debris when they did do, I think it was an EBS or something like that. I'll check the email. But someone said, yeah, we started getting a lot of debris.
It's the main unit, too, the trash rack.
Yeah.
I think that's what it was.
Yeah.
And this resulted possibly in some mortalities, but that's being reflected in regular Pacific stage sampling.
Yeah, they said the pollen said tumbleweed sticks pretty decent.
Actually, lately we're getting very devious type of debris. It's actually longer roots and longer branches, which are causing making, you know, matting or on the surface after it accumulates. It's very difficult to clean or remove.
See, Ken, I'm not insane. Give me that look.
Yeah, Lots of debris.
Mayor, were you able to qualify any of the morts and the debris off the main unit two, trash bags?
Well, like I said, it's mostly there was the riggers when they were moving. We were not present because most of our biotechs are sitting at the separator now, removing the debris. So we were not present when during raking of main unit two. They reported some mortalities, but they were not extremely high. Likely the fish passage numbers are lower just during this last week. I don't know how we can quantify. It's less than 100 total.
Well, I mean, did they dump it over on the North Shore? I mean, can you look at it and see if there's more to it? You know, the debris on it?
Right.
Were there any adults they should present? See
them. Like I said, because of... Well, this situation that evolved over the previous weekend when the debris came in, I'm assuming pretty quickly.
The riggers didn't show any or say anything about
it. We had over 4 feet of main unit two, which later we discovered, you know, doesn't happen very often, that people have paid the differential. And the raking procedures, of course, during this high flow were signed that they were trying to rake under operations, not normal, scaled down to 100 megawatts, didn't bring up any debris. They had to force the unit out of service, and only then the debris floated and was able to clean it.
Jammed up pretty good.
Okay.
Is that where they found the Lampert?
No.
Lampert?
No.
So they rake the debris at John Day, they put it in a truck and then haul it off, bring it up and dump it in the back of a truck.
The Lampert?
Yeah.
Okay, can we move on?
Researcher
updates, 3.31.
So the first three, these are just updates as to what's going on at the projects as far as researchers that have been approved to access the projects. We have Fish and Wildlife collecting 200 adult and 200 juvenile shad at Bonneville. Yakima Nation will be sampling adult coho at the Bonneville AFF in conjunction with the Critfix samplers there. USGS already collected juvenile lamprey from John Day. And then the next two are Bob Cordy's.
Can I interject for Bonneville real quick a question?
No.
Are the tribes looking for any GBT when they're on these adults?
I mean, they know fish condition.
Okay.
I can go find out.
It'd be interesting to know if they're...
Look at the fins and the eyes, yeah. Especially the eyes.
Right.
I'll have to ask them how when they're trained. I don't know if that's part of the plan. I know Granite does, but...
Yeah, I don't know that they are. You guys are.
Okay.
In the past, we've asked people who were in there, Idaho mainly, to look at them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is being
a
little.
Yeah. And?
Oh, I just was wondering, what are the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service doing with the shad, the adults?
They're doing pathogen testing on them.
They're doing what?
Pathogen.
I thought it was
passage.
Passage
something.
Pathogen.
Yeah. The other note. Well, Rick mentioned out in the hall. It would be kind of interesting to hear your anecdotal stuff about the Kentama fish.
That's not on the agenda yet. That can go at the end. You guys have already screwed my agenda in half.
This is a researcher update.
Yes, I know. It goes at the end of them.
We'll go to Bob Cordy for two items. Then we have Trevor, and then we'll add your researcher update.
I'd like to add it at the end.
Okay, Rick, get ready. You'll be on point soon. All right, we are through the first three researcher updates. Moving on to 3.34, the DALs, tribal lamprey. Bob?
Okay, Aaron Jackson, you still on the phone?
I am.
Okay. This is has to do with yours. It is for lamprey trapping. Now, you should have an attachment on your agenda to show some locations for those traps. They're looking for additional locations to put in traps so they can meet their numbers. They're struggling to get lamprey. Last year, you might recall, they had the traps in between the picket leaves at the count station, and they're going to continue that and try to get their numbers. And then also they would like to look at the Dalles, the South Rock Channel down in Westford Park.
and try to put some traps in there. We've seen when we dewater that section, that's probably one of the most likely areas where we find landfill when we dewater. So the thought is maybe they could put some traps down in those channels. Easy access, pretty good spot actually to get those traps in. And then some other spots, some other possibilities that we were looking into was out in front of the entrances and kind of off into the side eddy areas off the entrances. I don't know if we have a distance requirement. We would minimum distance requirement. We'd like to apply to that. So anyways, that's the proposal in a nutshell.
I haven't seen any pictures of this.
But they're not in
the agenda. They're not on
mine. It was because it's a PDF. It was sent as an attachment.
Don't have it on my agenda.
It was the two in the email that you sent out later, right?
Okay,
I didn't have
immediately
it.
Following.
Okay. Didn't have time to
Gary.
Aaron, were there any other spots that I didn't mention?
I think you highlighted it there. You know, we're mostly just, you know, concerned with not getting a number of fish that we need for tribal targets. Now everybody's aware there's more lamprey needed for translocations, not just Nematilla tribes doing it. Nez Perce and Yakima tribes are involved as well. And so with the bleak counts returning, we need to increase effort to get them, you know, our numbers that we need. And we're looking to collect, I believe, each tribe around 100 adult lamprey per tribe from the Dalles. And last year when we ran at the picketed leaves, I think we caught one lamprey, and it was a radio tag lamprey, and we ended up releasing it. And so we want to concentrate, you know, in some other areas where lamprey may be known to congregate, and that provide, you know, easy access for to get in there and have minimal impact to current operations and passage there. And, you know, we'd look to, you know, continue to follow the same FPOM guidelines of, you know, reducing smell and things like that. We'd be running these in conjunction between Yakima and Umatilla tribe staff would be running these 24/7. And we'd, you know, go from there, basically. So, but mostly, you know, we're just looking to increase our efforts out there to hopefully increase catch. So, and we've, you know, talked about the South Rock Channel. Makes good sense. It's kind of a natural environment. There's probably the ability to get a few traps down in there that doesn't impact passage. And, you know, these traps are designed to capture only lamprey. And so there shouldn't be any impact with any other fish, you know, getting entrained or entrapped in these funnel pots that we use.
These are funnel pots, the funnel traps?
Yep. Like the PVC.
Yeah, I know which ones they are. Right. So you're just dropping them in. What are you checking those, Aaron?
How often?
Yeah, what time of day?
Usually we're checking them first thing in the morning. And, you know, we'll set them and they'll set overnight. And so my crew is typically down there, you know, 8, 9 in the morning. They check them. It takes maybe, you know, just virtually seconds to pull them out and check them and deploy them again. So
okay.
That's typically when that would occur during, you know, the early morning hours.
Yeah, that's when our salmon are typically moving too, so it's not the best. But, I mean, it's okay for up the ladder, but right at the entrance is what I'm concerned about.
And in the entrance, it would be, you know, it wouldn't be right at it. It'd be off.
Well, that's what I'm wondering about. I mean, this is not very detailed drawing, but if we could, I think it's, I'd say, yeah, let's do it, but let's look at
around the corner, you know, around the corners. I think these balloons actually point to about the location where they would be placed, especially on figure.
So it'd be kind of around the sides on the back end.
The lower balloon, you know, we're looking on around the edges there, so it definitely wouldn't be right directly in front of any of the entrances.
Right at the end of the area.
You know, the lamprey are approaching those, probably coming and attaching to those rounded sections that lead to the entrances there, so it makes, you know, good sense to have a trap hanging off right there. And this is more exploratory stuff, you know. And,
this one's already in.
Well, we're trying to learn our anchor.
He's talking about this.
We're trying to figure out where, you know, where we can get these traps that, you know, that we can coordinate through FPOM and, you know, to minimize impact to other fisheries, but yet to increase our efficiency as well.
So this is only at the Dalles?
Yeah.
Did you talk?
We have the Dalles for right now.
For now?
Today. We're just, you know, we're continuing to fish at the Pickett and Leeds. And Bonneville, we're collecting any fish that are above the 2% research stake on each day. And we have access to the new tail race traps on the weekend as well.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, and this one is kind of off.
Yeah.
What will you guys be using for bait in those traps? Or
No bait. Just the traps themselves. You know, lamprey, everybody knows they're nocturnal, so during the daytime when they're approaching these structures, they're looking for somewhere to hide. And that's kind of the idea. You know, we have these traps down in there. Might provide some cover for them. So they, you know, likely, hopefully, enter these traps and then, you know, we'd have them from that point.
So how many traps at a location, each location?
You know, probably two at each of these locations.
Okay.
You know, on the Dalles, the east entrance, you know, there'd probably be two traps hanging off of that rounded section.
Right.
We usually, in the picketed leads, you know, we're putting 3 to 5 traps in each picketed lead site.
Yeah. And that's
and in the south channel down there, Fishway, there'd probably be at least 2 or 3 traps down there as well. And they're suspended off of ropes, you know, and tied up.
Right.
You know, hand railing typically.
Right. And that south section on that in the south channel, are you putting those all in one location? Or are you just going to spread them out and?
You know, we're going to highly coordinate that with Bob when we get down there.
Okay.
But I'm guessing they, you know, be in pretty close proximity.
I'm just trying to get a picture of what effect this might have on salmon. I don't see any real issue with a couple of traps at the entrances as long as they're outside of the entrance like you're talking about. Inside the channel, that gets to be a little more touchy. Although that channel, I don't think, is our most used entrance. So
yeah, that's one of the reasons why we live there.
At least under normal years. This year, with we got, five spill bays open on that side of the river, that side of the wall.
Yeah.
So we may be seeing some more passage there, but...
You know, these traps, too, you know...
They're pretty small.
I'm imagining inside... Well, I know inside the South Rocky section there, you know, they'll be sitting on the bottom.
Yeah. You guys are... I'm only concerned about the activity of putting them in and out and just kind of, you know, any scent. And you're using gloves and all the methods that we've advised already, so it should be okay. I would get concerned if we had, like, 10 traps going in or something like that. Then it starts to get kind of... We'd have to be careful.
You know, we'll continue and we'll observe what happens when the traps go in and out, and as I'm sure you guys will too, you know.
So yeah, there's not much. We won't really be able to tell anything there because that south channel doesn't have a specific window on it or anything. I don't anticipate a big issue here. At some point we may cause a problem, but this. What was that?
I do have one question. Does it require a shutdown of any diffusers or anything to install and take them out?
No,
they're just going to drop them in and pull them out with what's going on there. So I don't see that as a problem. As long as you guys are clean about it. The only thing I would say is if we got to a point where we had a lot of these things going in a fish way close to an entrance like that I would suggest not checking them in the morning but doing it later in the day if that's possible. I don't know if that's... You know, once the lamprey's in the trap, they're pretty much caught. I don't know if they're injured over time. You know, if you're concerned about that, I don't know if there's a negative issue for you guys if you wait till noon, say, instead of doing it first thing in the morning when fish are entering, when salmon are entering. So that would be my only...
We'll see any injury of lamprey inside the traps.
Okay.
Pretty well.
That would be my only suggestion, I think, to if we see more and more of these things go in, is that we're just probably going to want to do the activity out there at a time when salmon aren't really actively, you know, entering.
Gary, maybe you're thinking the main channel, that kind of stuff, you do midday, picket leads, other stuff like that, you can do in the morning, so you can phase it in.
There,
you do that other stuff first, then come and
just any areas where we know we have salmon activity that are trying to enter the fishway.
I think once they're in the channel, they're going to go on by, probably not pay attention. But, you know, once it sees around the entrances and near the entrances.
That's what I was going to say. Maybe do everything first and do that as your last thing.
Just stay off the peak activity hours of SAM, and then I'm okay with it.
Sounds reasonable.
Okay. And so that's after 12 o'clock to check those?
Yeah. Well, we know when they enter, you know, the data that we have. I think we have some of that information laid out. So just look at that and say, okay, let's not. Yeah. It's in the fish passage plan. Yeah, let's not have any activity when we know we have peak salmon entrance activity, and then
okay,
we're
so
fine.
I'll double check those and pick the perfect time to check. And then we're looking at just two per site or
right
per location, right?
Well, I think Aaron said three at the south channel. Is that right, Aaron?
Yeah, you know, that's what we're thinking. Something along those lines.
No,
12 inches of diameter.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be an issue. It's just I'm more interested in when you do the activity than how many,
okay.
I guess.
So that's like avoid the peak salmon period in the near entrance locations?
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, and if you're in around the entrance area where salmon are trying to enter, I wouldn't want to have a lot of activity going on. You may. No matter how careful you are, you may have fish back out of there or spook.
Thanks.
But yeah, we see the need and agree with you and getting it done.
And so if any of these sites are really productive and they want to add more traps, we should bring it back up here.
Yeah, bring it up. I mean, I think it's fine. It's just we don't want to have, if it gets to be like, you know, 2 or 3 hour activity out there, that's an issue. If it's just a few minutes.
Okay.
In and out, that's not a big deal.
Okay.
Okay. That's my opinion.
Other,
Tom?
Oh, we support it. I'd get shot if I did.
I just had to ask a question. Any other concerns? All right.
I'm good on that one.
We're good.
Okay, so the next one.
All right.
The next one.
Now we're on to sturgeon.
Yes.
Hey, thanks, Aaron.
Hey, thank you, guys.
Okay, so this was brought up before. The tribes are doing broodstock sturgeon collection out of the cul-de-sac, and they're catching lots of sturgeon. Unfortunately, they're not catching the right ones. A lot of them are not viable. They have they've caught like well over 100 already, and they only had four of them that were actually good for broodstock. So they're running out of bait.
So they want
this is why you're here.
And so they're looking. This is actually coming from Bob Rose, and I already told him what I'm pretty sure what the answer is
no.
going to be.
It's a no. What was the question?
And not hell no.
Well, that comes after
okay.
the question.
So, anyways, he was eyeing up the transportation channel, noticing the piles of shad that are already in there right along the wall, and he's like, "Oh, we could just put a shad dart in there and get all we want in about 2 minutes for bait." So, okay, I'll bring it up to FPOM. So that's it.
Where's it at?
Is it no and hell no?
Where transportation channel in?
It's transportation channel.
The south channel of the south? Or?
The transportation channel just downstream of the junction pool where it starts to bend and go along the powerhouse.
Okay.
There's an open spot there and the shad dart is stacked in there. Yeah.
Yes.
Not the east entrance, the transportation channel, two channels over from the east entrance.
Right, but it's just below the entrance.
That's where the big sturgeon hang out and pin them against the wall there. Anyways, you know, thinking about it, it's an awful bad question.
Aren't they already fishing in the water? Where are they fishing for the sturgeon?
Now, are you cleaning?
In the cul-de-sac.
So, Bob, can you say it's part of cleaning? You're helping clean a lot of the shads, the fishing. Huh? You might be able to get them to buy that.
Call it that.
Do you
call
think?
It what you want,
shad
I guess.
Do you really think?
Thinking about it, you drop a jig in there a foot, you'd have a shad in about a second, rip right out like a tuna. But
why don't we just snag it?
Is this speaking from experience, Bob?
But,
I get a little nervous there.
One step leads to another.
That's I'm worried about the precedent.
Well, you know what, you guys got hoop. You've got hoop net, tribal hoop net guys right there by the nav lock. I'm sure that they're got to get some shad in their hoop net.
Why not?
Can't they save a few for them? And
no fishing in the ladder. We don't
have
a ladder.
Okay, no.
I mean, trapping lampreys, one thing.
I just think
hook and line fishing in a ladder.
We gave them fish yesterday, and we're giving them more fish today as part of the AFF.
Yeah. There you go.
So
they're already getting them.
They're already getting them. I don't know how many they want or if it's going to be an ongoing thing. We're just raking them off the trash rake. I mean, trash back there at the great pool. So
good idea.
Nice and soft. Agreed to do it for them. So yeah, if that works.
I thought Shad didn't go through the AFF.
They get trapped there.
Yeah.
They go up to the big pool and they go around and around and around in circles.
Oh, okay.
We need some for our research as well. So if you get extras,
get in line.
Yeah. You're looking,
you're okay, so done. Cross that off. I'll give them the word.
Okay, no fishing in the ladder.
For me personally.
Hey, Gary, to follow up on what you were asking about at McNary, when spill pattern was changed, I can't fully explain why, but it was at basically 001 hours, so middle of the night yesterday.
Oh.
Last night.
No, the gas levels have been up for 2 days in a row. Much earlier than that.
June 8th at 0001
is when
they started
working that.
Was when they did the pattern change.
Yeah. Okay.
Doug?
David Bather.
I thought she said it was this morning, actually, at 0001. So sorry, now I should probably reconfirm the date, but I was told this morning.
They were out yesterday.
Okay, they were out yesterday? Okay. So anyway, based on yesterday's data, then it was midnight yesterday. Prior to that, it was humming along at 132. And then once the change was made, it spiked up to 141. So there seemed to be a pretty significant spike in gas, as you've indicated. So
right, at the time they did this?
Correct.
Oh, I thought it was earlier than that, but I just took a quick look, and it looked like all yesterday we were at close to 140.
That's what I'm saying. Yesterday, at just a couple minutes after midnight. So all day yesterday.
So it does correlate.
It does correlate.
Okay,
is the point.
Okay, I didn't look.
Well, because you're back in. Your GSMs are out. You're back running normal spill right now.
Not right now. It was. I got a phone call this morning that said that we'll back to our normal pattern sometime today, but it was taken. They had to get the. But sometime today.
It goes back before that.
Yeah.
Back down.
By long ways.
Yep.
The correlation is.
That's what I thought. It doesn't correlate.
What is it?
It goes back to yesterday at 12 at noon. Yesterday it was 140% or just under.
141 at 1500.
So it doesn't fit.
Stayed in the mid 130s and the high of 140.
Well. We need to
look at it more.
The spill levels were up too. Unless you caused spill levels to go up in the process of doing this, did you?
Didn't change.
Shouldn't have changed spill levels.
Well, the spill levels did go up from a couple days when we were at 130. The spill levels were like 320. They're like 360 now. And the gas
370
jump went up 10% first. I just think we're overtopping the deflectors. We're just.
Well, it's probably a combination. If you take four out, overtopping deflectors, you're just making everything possibly worse. We'll know a lot more tomorrow when the full spill pattern's back in session.
Everything's back for a few hours.
Yep. All right. We can. Yeah.
Got some buckets.
Moving on. I guess.
So it's not your fault.
It's okay. Yeah.
It's okay.
Thanks. All right. Alternative gear mortality study.
Can you do that one again?
Yeah.
This is Trevor's.
I'm just going to give an update on
the word.
What's been said on that. Basically, Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife is proposing to conduct an alternative gear mortality study. Most of you know that came to the presentation last FPOM. Downstream in Bonneville Dam, they're basically trying to evaluate the mortality of the fish that are released, the bycatch, you know, wild fish they let go. You know, what's the chance that they're not going to make it, so they can put that into their harvest estimates. To do that, they would like to have a control group, and they want to use the AFF to capture their control group. And they would like us to relax our criteria so they can capture fish above 72 degrees. And we've pretty much told them on several occasions no for the fish, and to be fair to other groups as well that we've told no. So we're sticking to that, but we're trying to help them out at the same time find a decent control. They still would like to use the AFF, so we're looking into some little tweaks in the AFF, maybe that still don't violate the criteria. But the technical details of that we haven't worked out, you know, ourselves. We're kind of still evaluating to see if we like it or not. So we're working with Washington on that, and when we come up with something, we'll bring it up to you guys and kind of bring it to the region and see.
You also might want to talk to the Cricket researchers that are out
there. They were at the meeting yesterday.
Okay. So I'm sure they're coordinating, because they get a little touchy when something...
We're working with John.
And
they take our comments back about the control, you know, what's
true. Yeah, the thing about the control is there isn't a good control for this. There's no way you can get a good control. So what they're going to do is... they have their single release estimate, so they're releasing downstream of Bonneville, from there to Bonneville Dam. That's their single release. That's like the most conservative group. Your mortality is probably actually better than that. And then they're going to use their control from the AFF or from hatcheries as kind of the flip side of that, where your mortality is probably worse than that. And they're going to use those as kind of a bracket, and they're going to report them both and say, well, the actual mortality is probably in between the two.
Have they thought of doing something, just since we're not going to do a summer spill test at Bonneville, all the JSAT stuff's out there, they get some active JSATs, some in their fish, and with JSAT detections, that might answer some questions, because the main thing is you worry about, like, harvest, other mortality that's not associated with it. It seems like if you do a subsample of active tags, you get some of that issue, you see how...
Yeah, there's been multiple ideas tossed around, and when it comes down to it, it's not really our call to help them with that. You know, we are helping them, but it's not really our place to tell them how to do it. We just tell them that they can't use the ASF bus anymore. I know. There's lots
of
ideas.
But we
did have some success, though, in getting them to reduce their sample size. They were originally talking about 1,000 fish from each stock because they were going to estimate all the way up to McNary with that. Well, we kind of discussed with them, you can use pit tags from Bonneville to McNary. So you just need that little piece from below Bonneville to Bonneville,
and
that's not going to need 1,000 fish. So they're looking back with their stats guys and trying to reduce their sample size. So it's going to be less fish than originally thought, hopefully.
Okay.
And then another thing on that, I remember in FPOM discussion, they brought this up as well. There's going to be some gantry work going on. Is that going to affect the AFF in the next year or two?
It'll be in 2012.
In 2012, and so will that shut down the ladder? Or,
yep. The ladder will be shut down for the lamprey work that will occur in 2012 as well. The gantry work shouldn't have too much of an impact on it.
It's the fall if they're doing this, so.
It's supposed to be back.
It'll be back. I mean, it has to be back. It's just that they're going to shut it down early, so we're talking, November, maybe a month early?
The fishway? Mm-hmm. Yes, the fishway will get shut off the 12th of November of 2012.
That's it. Right, so it's early, but it's not. It shouldn't affect this thing or anything that's going on. Really.
So the 12th of November is when it shuts down?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right.
Other than that, there's going to be no changes in flow or anything to the AFF?
Well, there might be. It depends upon what debris on the fish units is, because we won't have a way, really.
Well, and then the gantry out, are you guys going to switch powerhouse priority?
Yes.
And by doing that, you're going to reduce your sheer number of adults there regardless, because by not having powerhouse 2 on, it's going to allow her to get fish in the AFF.
So when you're meeting with them, and you said Critfic was there at the meeting, are you also including Bonneville Project Fisheries? Because they may have...
Not on this one.
Not on this one.
There will be another meeting real soon with all of the regional folks. It could be an FPOM. It should be an FPOM, but it'd be an ad hoc meeting, because I don't think we want to wait until July.
Can we have a subcommittee?
Yeah, really, it's the AFF subcommittee. It is. It would be a group of that, get back together and talk about what everybody's come up with here.
You know, the one thing that I heard, and I don't know if that's the direction it's going, it might be premature, but trying to use a tank over on that north flume, I don't think that's going to be a possibility. There's no equipment on those gates, for one, so they have to all be put together, but I don't even know if we have it.
Well, I'm sure you've got lots of money for that.
Sure.
The time.
But then we also have to have access to that.
Would you guys just put a paddle lock on this thing, please?
I just heard that. I don't think that's a possibility. So I just didn't want to fix it.
Okay. Well,
too
that's
far down the road without.
Okay. Well, that's that's been talked about. So there's lots of talk about how to rearrange things and do different, to accommodate these additional fish. And we've been working with Critfic and with Washington with their wants, but at the same time cautioning them that there's going to be constraints here, and if they have the extra money. But I want to also point to the Corps. I've been told years ago that this facility would be slowly shut down, that we're not going to be using it in the future because we have no future research and, you know, really no need to. This goes toward division for rock. You know, all I'm seeing is escalation. I'm not seeing it being shut down. I'm not seeing it being reduced. We're not even doing any core work there yet. We've got everybody mining up to get in there.
Right.
So,
and since it's not core work, we're having a hard time justifying a lot of O&M on that,
yeah,
especially
exactly.
when our budget is getting cut every
single
year.
And I'd like
year.
To see you guys not only up the O&M, but redesign and rebuild the darn thing if we're going to have so many people in there. So.
That's not
this
the highest priority.
Road, you know, there's a train wreck here.
When you have crumbling fishways, would you rather have a functional fishway or a functional trap?
What,
kind of.
I was going to bring up your crumbling fishways next. Yeah. Here, so that's.
We're
I would rather have a new fishway.
What's the recipe on that?
All right.
Okay. So anyway, that meeting can be. It's going to be an interesting one. We just need to get it set up and get everybody at the table.
Okay. All right, I think we are now up to 3.37. Dennis, the update that you wanted to provide, this was added.
Yeah, this is the added one. I just wanted Rick just to kind of just mention what Kuntama, you know, was in the Bonneville SMF collecting fish, and Rick had a little bit of information just because I asked him about if we're seeing any gassed fish. In the small mooring facility at Bonneville, and he just had an interesting note. I thought you guys would be interested in hearing.
Well, in their last collection, they collected their juvenile monitoring facility 50 fish, tagged them, and were holding them. And while they were holding them, 17 of them died, and they examined them. They all had gas bubble symptoms. So the thought was that they were unable to compensate because they were held in shallow tanks, and then bubbles came out of solution, and they died. So. That was their last group, so they didn't have anything after that. And so it was just another incidental occurrence of gas bubble symptoms.
So we verified the lab work that Noah did 15 years ago. Fiddler's work. Hey, fish
Dolly's work
water.
From the 60s.
So,
okay.
But it's interesting to note that research fish...
They still die. They still die.
Well, they die, but it may be it may compromise their release groups more than what they thought. I mean, 17 died, but what happened to the other group? Yeah.
This is whose groups were
these? Kuntama.
This is Kuntama's.
So whatever.
This huge tags. Who was funding this again, Scott?
Anyway, thank you so much for the update. It just helps.
Thank you.
Hey, we'll
thanks.
Move on.
Okay.
That's very
One last researcher update. I just received word from Lomo that yesterday they did some testing of some new small tags. And Tom, this is primarily for you. That is actually Noah that did testing at Lomo yesterday of these new juvenile lamprey tags, 6 millimeters.
The so, bit or
JSAT?
They must be pit. Because there's 6 millimeters. That just happened yesterday at Lomo.
There was an SRWG proposal for that, talking about comparing 12 versus 8. Now they're doing 12 versus 6.
So I just, Spurgeon just said that it was a really good day of testing. Obviously, it's. You know, yesterday it happened, but he said things went really well here, and we'll keep posting on the results, but kind of cool to know that that was occurring. All right, we are now moving on to 3.4 through 3.6. These are the updates. We are getting kind of late.
Yeah.
Skip them.
Anything for Fitterwig?
If there's nothing, then they just see nothing. There's nothing.
Had a couple. Had a meeting. Okay.
Okay.
RCC
update.
RCC. There's still a lot of water.
A lot of water.
It's enough.
EPA. Starting to increase. Do you want to hear the numbers?
A lot of wind.
You want to hear numbers?
Skip. Okay.
Yeah.
So here's increased 10-day forecast. Day one, inflows around 287. Day five, inflows around 290. And then day 10. Around 269, and starting at Lower Granite, proceeding. Lower Granite, day one, inflows 225, day five, 192, and then by day 10, dropping down to 180. And for Bonneville,
Bonneville inflows day one, 510, day five, 496, and day 10, 471. So, a little spike, gradual recession.
It's going to be short.
Okay.
Average everything.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Doug. Any questions for Doug? Okay, moving on. Scott, do you have any? We have BPA updates on the agenda. Anything?
I think all transformers are working fine.
Good. No wind problems?
No, actually, we've been doing the environmental redispatch, and that's been helping us keep the turbines on. So when we need certain amounts of energy dropped, we replace the wind energy with turbines running instead of them using theirs.
And I'm sure you have negotiations with them about that.
Much more to come on that somewhere. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a huge topic.
All right. Lucky you.
Yeah. It's actually going really well from a fishery standpoint. We're doing the best we can to keep the turbines on. Mm-hmm. And it's a really important tool, so we need to convince someone else that it's a very important tool.
Yeah. Okay. Good. All right. Moving on to agenda topic four, Bonneville spillway issues. Dennis?
Yeah. Kind of give you a little bit of background, and I'll make it quick. Most of you are aware of the Bonneville spillway and the complexity and the issues associated with the degradation of a couple areas at Bonneville, specifically the shelf below bays 2, 3, and 4, and then bays 9, 12, and 14. There was some erosion issues and pitting in those issues. Specifically, bay 9 is one of the more contentious bays because we're about 5 feet from the lower gallery. So back in about every year we've been doing a bathymetry survey at Bonneville to get a handle on change of condition in the tail race. We did a bathymetry survey back in 2010. I don't have that information in front of me, but we wanted to do an additional one in 2011 post spill. Right now, the issues are, and this is going to be Matt Cutts is the project manager for the Corps. Don Erickson used to be the original project manager. Matt Cutts is getting handed this, but there's two specific issues that are of greatest concern. One is that the undercutting of the current apron over by bays 2, 3, and 4 used to be, as measured back in 2009-2010 timeframe, was about 23 to 28 feet of undercutting. At that time, there was analysis done, and they felt like that if there was continued degradation underneath that shelf, at some point it's going to fail. And they felt that failure could happen or could be imminent soon, okay, with additional degradation. The erosion at Bay 9, they felt concern to where we've got 5 feet left. What would we do if it eroded all the way through and flooded the lower inspection gallery? So once again, this has kind of reared its ugly head. The Corps of Engineers has said that we need to be proactive on a contingency plan when it comes to what would we do if the apron failed, and secondly, what would we do if we had a breach at Bay 9 into the gallery. So the Corps of Engineers and the corporate board, as well as a PDT, has been established to specifically look at fish operations and what our contingency plan would be for operations if the apron failed in those areas, but also if we had to close off Bay 9 or Bay 12 or Bay 14. Back in 2008, because of the same type of concern, we were down at Erdick looking at different spill patterns and things associated with closure of those bays, and if we could come up with some form of new quote-unquote spill patterns that looked good with some of those bays closed. Our initial report back in 2009 was that Bonneville is very touchy about closing bays. So you close a bay off, you get an eddy. You close certain bays off, it makes it even worse. The contingency plan for the Corps right now is to do a post-spill bathymetry survey below Bonneville, very detailed like we did in 2010, look at that data, and then there's a PDT that is going to go down and specifically do a modeling trip to go back and look at closing of certain bays if we have bay failure. But also wrapped into this is that if you fail the apron and you have to either close bays or what that apron failure would look like in the model and what type of spill patterns or what we would have to close or how we would have to operate to protect fish. So this is very fish-centric. It's under the CRFM program. It's looking at specifically if you have if you have to close bays or were forced to close bays because of hydraulic failure issues and structural failure issues, what would be our path forward, and kind of document how would what contingency plan the Corps would do in light of quote unquote fixing these sooner than later. So two items. One is the corporate board's being briefed tomorrow on this. Secondly, a PDT and a group is being formed to work out a contingency plan. Randy Lee, most of you know, hydraulic engineer, is the technical lead. I've been assigned to help look once again at the alternatives and come up with alternatives. On the other side, there's another side, which is the construction general side, the O&M side. They're looking for funding on for plan and spec and, you know, plans for repair, but that's outside of the CRFM. We're worried about if it fails before they fix it, how do we operate and what are the impacts going to be. So the path forward is we gather the information from the survey. We've set forth a plan to go down and do specific modeling at ERDC, which will include a regional trip for you guys to come down and invite those that want to look at the model and look what we've done, you know, what kind of patterns we could come up with. So that's currently the path forward with that.
Okay. We're looking at the trip this fall.
Yeah, I would say the earliest it could be is probably November. Reason being is September we'll get the bathymetry data. Hopefully by the end of September we'll turn that around. October we feed the information to ERDC. And then ERDC has got to make some changes to the model, how we're going to simulate failure at the apron. Uh-huh. It's the other things are fairly easy, closing bays off and looking at patterns. But
right.
It's really how do we design things that we can pull in and out over by bays 2 and 3 to simulate failure of the apron.
It is. If you have a failure, you're going to have to put sheet piles or anything around it to protect it.
If you have failure, there's concern about several different things. One is there's a bentonite seam, I guess a soft clay seam that runs through the spillway, underneath the spillway at bays 3 and 4, okay? So if that fails, they're worried about that eroding back underneath the full foundation of the spillway.
Definitely will.
The fix involves, if it collapses, the fix is way more expensive than if the Corps tries to handle it before failure.
Yeah.
The fix, if it fails, is a full coffer of half the spillway almost. Which is,
it gets you back to the original construction. I mean, that's going to be it'll be huge.
Yeah.
Dewater that whole area.
But if there's some intermediate fixes, like sheet pile just around the hole or something, can you model that in?
I think so. I think those are things we're going to be engineering as we look at. Do you have anything we could quickly go in and we could, you know.
How would you drive that down you'd have to look. That sounds scary.
Whatever solutions they have in the short run, you may want to model on this trip if you're going to create the problem and try to create a fix.
Exactly. Yeah. They're looking at failure, and then we could also include options for, if we try to bolster it up or we try to, temporarily put a fix in, what are those?
Well, it'd be pretty easy to fix it, just to fix it with grout concrete. It just has to be done.
Yeah.
So when do you do it?
Yeah.
Before it breaks.
Before it fails.
Yeah. Because that will be the end of that side of the
And school. I was out there yesterday, and 300,000 looks really ugly.
Yeah, it's ripping. Sturgeon Rock is like a little...
You can ask for a no-spill period in August to do a survey?
No, in September.
Soon as spill is off.
Well, And I specifically looked yesterday to see if, you know, if the apron failed, would there be a kick up on the lower, you know, see if you saw a bigger standing wave than what's going on the southern side of this building. There wasn't any really evidence. I have a feeling that thing would crumble and just get beat up so bad you'd never see the apron.
300 plus, yeah.
It just grinded up.
As we get down to our prescribed levels of spill this year, though, that the issue, I think, needs to be discussed as to whether we go to a 95 flat or a gas cap.
There was the discussion at Fitterwig on whether or not lower spill levels have a higher chance of helping further the erosion as we, you know, as we move, because our deflector performance, right now we've kind of lost all deflector performances.
Yeah,
you know, whatever. I mean, you get what you get. But as you get lower, especially those outer bays, only bays 1, 2, and 3 have the 7-foot deflectors. But any on the other side of that, you got the 14-foot deflectors, and their performance, you lose it about 14 feet.
Yeah.
So, anyway, more to come on this.
Okay.
But just
Tom, any questions?
No, just once again, I wonder why we haven't done something a little sooner.
It's a big deal. I mean, that's means
it's a bigger deal.
Maybe
it
some. It'll
it's
be huge.
It seems like we should have done something maybe temporary.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's part of the PGT is trying to convince corporate that there's other things that they think are more imminent than this, that are a higher priority than fixing the spillway.
Well, if they want to fill it, spill it, no, that's fine.
Well, it's MCR. And see, and the problem is it doesn't get as big of a check mark when it comes to, because their life, limb, and property are not, it's not a quote-unquote life-threatening.
Well, they could probably pass enough flow with half the spillway to cover flood issues. But this is going to be a fish issue,
yeah,
because
is
that kind of spill pattern would really suck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Tail race.
And right now, the things above it are like the MCR jetty and Willamette Valley spill gates. So those have, quote-unquote, people and death behind it. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why that this is the lower. So anyway, just from a management perspective, that's... We know it's important around this table, but managers are also looking at other.
So we're gonna.
So,
yeah,
anyway, so that's the path forward.
Plan for the worst, hope for the best.
Yep.
And it's, you said it's all CRFM funded.
For this project, this is very very focused on specific alternatives of what we would do if we failed the apron and if we had to close certain bays.
That is, the repairs would not be.
The repairs are going to be under construction
come out of
general or O&M.
That's a big budget.
Yeah,
big,
huge.
Big budget.
The one we care about.
Going to be
okay.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks. Moving on to number 5, avian hazing lethal take request. Tammy?
The EA was sent out in a PDF in that second email. Comments are due not by the 23rd, but by the 21st. So if you review it and you have any comments, please get those to Dennis or myself and we'll forward them on. That's it.
Just one quick note. On this EA, it's a way for the Corps of Engineers, I think, kind of to plug in to lethal take without doing a full-blown EA on our own. So I think it's a good way to have something out there for us to use if needed without doing a bunch of additional, I guess, research or experimentation on the Corps' side. So for us, it's beneficial to have some comments to this. So if we
are the comments that you're looking for, just yeah, we're okay with this, or what type of comments?
Whatever comments.
I think a lot of it is like there's some specifics in there about take and take it projects. Look at that. See if you see any things that you wouldn't agree with or yeah, you wouldn't buy off on.
Okay.
Yeah,
I already sent some comments to Paul Schmidt.
Okay.
Consolidating them.
Paul's going to be the clearinghouse. We,
okay.
You know, Tammy and I will collect them as much as we can, and we'll consolidate and send, this is what we got from FPOM, Fitterwig,
okay.
Whatever.
Any questions, Gary? You good?
Huh? I'm sorry. I'm looking at these change requests.
Okay.
Yep.
He's
all right.
Moved on.
Try to get ahead.
Bad. Number 5, two issues at McNary. First is... replacement of cranes 9 and 10. This is something that is happening in 2013, so it's a little ways out there, But at the same time, we wanted to get this coordinated now because schedules are being planned as we speak. So, Greg?
Yeah, these are the two cranes that go, well, one crane goes above the Washington Shore Fishway. The other one goes above the Oregon Shore Fishway. These are the two cranes in there. Bad shape, and in fact, this winter I'm really wondering if they're ever going to operate this winter too. But it's not a R&R; it is actually a replacement of the machines themselves. Oregon Shore, there is a what they're going to do. They'll have to keep one crane in operation. Hopefully, still manage keep that crane in operation so they go through the winter months when that shore needs to be worked on. At that time, they can start working, constructing, and putting the other crane in place. And there's a place on the Oregon shore where it's fine. I feel it's a good spot for them to work on. However, the same situation has to be done at the Washington shore. The question, you know, we've got to use the crane, the existing crane, but at the same time construct and place the crane in place. But there is no location that is away from the water to do it. And we have to do it. Anyway, and I just want clearance from FPOM that we're going to do it, we're going to get done. They don't anticipate any main loud sounds or noises like that going on. Air tools, and that's about it. It's not going to use any, you know, whatever.
So when?
This would be during the passage, I mean the in-water work period.
Oh.
So when the ladder is out of service.
This is going to be in?
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure it may extend a little bit longer.
Right. Issue.
I'm just giving that, you know, a little bit of thought.
In order to work period, no problem. The skids are going to stop at a certain point.
Well, they got to stop because, you know, unfortunately, if they already started deconstructing one crane and the other one's out of service, they can't put that blasted ladder back in operation.
Yeah, so they gotta get it. So gotta get it done before the ladder needs to be in operation.
Right.
So yep. Yeah, because
so
we'll have steelhead that are going to be wanting to move through. The Washington Shore is not quite as bad as Oregon Shore. So,
yeah.
So over water work is fine during the winter maintenance period.
Oh, yeah.
It gets outside of that, and we have problems.
Right. Yeah,
we'll
let us know how it goes.
Yep.
And this year they're going to do some electrical upgrades, so it'll be good.
But bottom line is those cranes are in rough shape, and we're limping them along now and hope to replace them. Then the next is these adult fishway entrances at McNary, and we're talking about permanent closures.
We're talking about permanent closures. These closures are facing inside these through the spillway. They've never been used, according to project personnel there for 20 years. The bulkheads are going bad, just like they've done at Blue Goose and Lower Granite. They're starting to show a time and age. Can we close those things off?
Permanently.
Concrete them in. Equipment, associated equipment. And it's going to have, these are a little bit larger than the Snake River plants. It's going to take more than 6 weeks for them to do, so it's going to interfere with the, it will interfere probably with some of the in-water work period of time. It's going to be important, and it's going to start here in another couple of years.
In water, it will? Do you think it'll get into that? Because that would be an issue.
Yes, it will be an issue. I don't have the details yet.
Yeah, why would it? It's not that big of a, I mean, you're just
well,
pouring.
If you do one, it's going to take, you know, like we did at Goose. If you did one, it's going to take a period of, let's say, from the middle of January to the end of February to do it. That didn't give us time. Budgeting, whatnot, to do the second one at all that year. So we're going to put it off.
Put it, do one in 2 years.
But then, you know, we do need maintenance on the other ladder and the other ladder. You know, maintenance, coordinate maintenance on one ladder, coordinate the maintenance on the existing one that's out too.
So I guess the concept of taking these structures that are bulkheads that have been there are deteriorating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I guess the first decision point is, are folks okay to make those rather than bulkheads that are going to bounce around and at an entrance that hasn't been used, are folks okay with that being permanently closed?
Yeah, we've done that up and down the river.
And I think the answer to that is yes, everyone's okay
yes.
with that.
Yes.
All right. Then the next Tom, you're okay with that?
Yeah. The next one would be, yeah.
Then the next question is, we need some more specifics on specifically when we go do this permanent closure, mm-hmm. how far out of January and February is this going to have, is this work going to have to occur? And we don't have those details yet. We'll bring those back. The first piece we can mark down as coordinated. Folks are okay with the concept of permanent closure. The second piece of timing.
Just to let you know, though, I wouldn't want to see this go at all into the spring, mm-hmm. into the, yeah. the beginning of yeah. the and maybe go the other way into November or December, but not yeah. not in the spring because okay. Steelhead are trying to get right. through this project mm-hmm. one way or the other. That's, that could be a serious yeah. impact.
I'd like to keep it for February 28th.
Yeah.
So we've got to be done by that time, but if yeah. we need to back up a yes. bit.
Do you think backing up time would be a good time? You know, if you know.
If you're going to pick one, that's probably a better time.
Yeah, I'm not giddy about doing either. I mean, I this is something I'd rather see happen over a two-year period if we have to make it, to get it done. I mean, it's been something that's been hanging around out there since, what, 1958?
Into, yeah. into safety and actually access for the biologists to get into the channel to inspect the channel. I think there okay. That's enough entry into the channel until those things are...
We'll have to bring back the piece of this that looks at timing. Yeah. We heard you loud and clear. We're okay to move.
Yeah.
The concept is okay. Mm-hmm. The concept of going past February 28 mm-hmm. is not okay. If there's going to be some wiggle room, perhaps we can look at December, but we need more details.
Yeah.
So December's fine.
I got those points.
Okay.
Yeah. December's fine.
Okay.
Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item 7, to the lower granite. NSE 1 and John.
Okay, earlier today we sent out an email to Palm on NSE 1 and 2. The spill that we had in Mid Bay caused some damage to the entrances on the North Shore, and NSE 1 came apart and the cable bird caged on the spool, it became useless. And the weir fell down to sill, and it stayed on sill. The other one, the associated next door weir, was fixed up 530.2, I think it was, 530.2 feet elevation. And then the message also said that we were going to update and fix, make temporary repairs at a later date. That was done this week. NSE 1 was raised to the very top and docked in place, so it's not moving at all. And NSE 2 was placed back in operation, normal operation. The advantage of this is it will help the fishway maintain criteria a lot better. The way it was also affecting NPE 1 and 2 operation because it was allowing the water to zip out of the channel a lot quicker, so it was really hard on the fishway. So with this change, it should operate a lot better. They accomplished that this week, or within the last couple days, so, and I confirmed that with my call for this morning. So the work was accomplished.
Okay. And more to come on everything John just described. It was a temporary fix to keep the ladder in criteria. There's still the long-term issue of getting these fixed so they're actually back in operation like they're supposed to be. So you'll hear more on this issue, but the immediate need of just having these things wide open and having the ladder out of criteria, that piece has been solved in the short term.
Okay. Also, the weir on NSE 1 is the motor is burned, and they're going to have to replace or rebuild it.
Yep.
So that's a major job in itself. So I don't know how long it will be out of service, but it's going to be a while.
Yep. Okay. Thanks, John. Okay. We're moving on to agenda topic 8, coordination notification forms. First one is Bonneville Powerhouse 1 turbine operations.
Okay.
Dennis?
What did you say? So yesterday I sent out a change form for Bonneville, and this has to do in conjunction with a white paper that the Corps created with TSP, with the TSP group about implementing a
change in operational, I guess, the operation band at Powerhouse 1. This got, we had a special FPOM call a little over two weeks ago talking about it. Some of the information that came out of that meeting was that the operational extension that we were looking for, moving from like the 9.8K at Powerhouse 1 to the 11.5K, some specific concerns from Idaho was that they would like to see gas levels get over 130 before we start increasing operations at Powerhouse 1 because of the unknowns, quote unquote, of this different operating point. Fish and Wildlife Service was in support of the 130, but was thinking that, well, maybe 125 is a better place to where they could look at it, but they wanted to also see some specific research. Tom had some specific comments about the unknowns about putting additional fish through Powerhouse 1, and we're already doing, you know, we know we have a good condition at 9.8. What would be the condition for fish as we increase load at Powerhouse 1 through these units? So there's some concern about, well, 9.8 is good. There was some concern about the unknown. Part of the white paper was to help support this operation, both operationally, what are we doing model-wise to kind of prove this different open geometry, and increased load was to look at specific beat strike and beat strike data, but also what biological data do we have out there to support extending the operating range at B1. So inside of that white paper, there's beat analysis, there was a trip report, a lot of background information there as well. There was also some biological data from balloon tag study we did in 1999, and some RP work that we did specifically at Bonneville in 2004-2005. So there's biological backup there that says we tested at some operating ranges above the current 1%, showing that we didn't have a biological problem there. But also we have beat strike data to say this open geometry at this upper end, we saw less beat strike. The other thing, and so we got some comments back for the region that said they would like us to do some additional analysis that said, specifically, they wanted to understand where the 1% kind of came from. It's a little bit more historical basis, but give a better explanation about open geometry, what we quote unquote a better definition of that. We discussed that at Fitterwig, so that kind of moved from this FPOM to once again a little bit more discussion with Gary was at the Fitterwig meeting. And so some additional discussions about what needs to be contained in the white paper and what agency representatives still had quote-unquote heartburn with about moving to that operation in the near term. So part of that discussion was that what could we prove post kind of in the SRWG process, what kind of research would we develop to look at this type of operation? So on the SRWG side, when it comes to research, looking at this open geometry operation for Powerhouse, we have a one-pager that is going to move forward with dealing with that, kind of a long term. Short term, I guess we wanted to propose some short-term operations that had some specific bounds on them to alleviate what we say is there's areas where we could operate these units to help reduce TDG and a few other things. So there were some specific items, and those were detailed in there that I can go through. One is spring or summer spill operations if we exceed 100K, and that in conjunction with the FPP spill for sea lion fallback concerns. So we would like to have this operational constraint be considered if we're going to spill over 100K to help reduce fallback. Secondly, if we exceed 120% TDG waiver, or if we're imminently creeping up on it, we think we're going to exceed it, can we have extended ops at Powerhouse 1 to help reduce that? Thirdly, if we have issues associated with Powerhouse 2 where we'd like to reduce Powerhouse load, to continue to keep screens in a B2, but we can back those units off and put that additional flow through B1. And fourthly, prior to implementation of when we start spill in April 10th, instead of us having to force spill, can we put more flow through B1 so we don't exceed hydraulic capacity or forced to spill? So we'd like to have. So those are four options that we put together that we're trying to take baby steps. These are implementation procedures that are above and beyond once we kind of lose hydraulic capacity at different places on the project. I did get one comment back because Dave Wills was not here. They felt that we needed more detail in the specific white paper that they asked for. But he was also saying that the Corps didn't provide or has not provided them with more, I guess, good passage information on what this operation would do for juvenile fish. So I passed around this little sheet, and I kind of want to draw your attention to. This is the JSATS information we got last year. So these are specific route-specific survival estimates. These are single release, and these were specific to last year's release.
These are single hose. You're above one on the corner collector.
Magic. That's
yeah.
So they are. I mean, you know they are.
Yeah.
They have to be, but then how do you get 100?
Yeah, how do you get
3?
Yeah.
Double detection?
Yeah. So what I kind of wanted to do is provide information, because there was concern about, okay, the concern was if you're going to pull fish over to B1, what are they going to be the impacts to those fish, okay? We can quantify the adult impacts, fairly easy, but the issue was, okay, what's the survival through those specific routes, and if you move fish from the spillway over to Powerhouse 1, are you going to have an overall impact on project survival?
Well, you're not just going to move them from the spillway. By decreasing the spillway brought fish also to the Powerhouse 2. So you're taking them away from Powerhouse 2 as well. Because you've seen that as the fish come down, the more flow you have on the north, they're more likely to go either Powerhouse 2 or spillway.
I would say that they're almost...
Really?
I think they're past that point of...
That would be a good thing anyway, so...
Yeah.
Decision Rock. Remember?
Yeah, Decision Rock, but you have your subulins are coming down the north side. So the less flow you have north of the spillway...
This is in the summer.
Likely. Well, I'm just talking about the time.
When there's only... When Powerhouse 1 isn't running, I will grant you, when Powerhouse isn't running, Powerhouse 1 isn't running, more fish pass Powerhouse 2 in the spillway.
There you go. Yep. Okay. So, I mean, for talking purposes for this operation, people felt like they needed a little bit more information on juvenile passage, specific if you shifted flows. This is just some information that's very current, that's very, what I consider very relevant, so you can compare apples. So if you shift 20K or if you shift flow, are you putting more fish through any kind of route that you're getting, reduced survival past the project? B1 turbines, yearling survival through B1 turbines last year was 99%. Steelhead through turbines was 91% compared to, quote-unquote, 95% through the spillway. But sub-yearlings, which we're entering now, which I think of concern, if you're pulling fish through B1, we have almost 97% through B1 turbines and 93% survival through the spillway.
Well, so you've got to remember the spillway, there was two treatments. So you've lumped your treatments.
There was a mid release, and then there was a spillway release.
Yeah, but no, I'm saying you had two spillway treatments last year. You were testing 100, you're testing 95 flat versus 75 gas cap. So you need to have the spillway better now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're right.
So you should have your spillway, you should have two, because unless you picked a spillway treatment that we don't know about, and this is
I can ask Brad. This is just what
it's
he pulled
probably
out
lumped.
Of. It's probably lumped, but...
Well, I usually like to see a little higher survival through the spillway.
Yeah, that's pretty bad, huh?
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I guess the point I was saying is that if we're concerned about, if we thought one route was specifically more detrimental...
I'd pick the spillway.
Huh?
Yeah.
So
16% of your fish going through the turbine units, that's a high percentage from a project. That's the project perspective.
It is.
That's all fish going to the project. You've got fairly high percent going to that powerhouse. So this is the first chance I've had to actually look at these. I was going to dig them up this morning. I just didn't have a chance to.
And so
I knew this was going to come up.
We knew that there was concern about not having some information about talking about these operations, but as we look at the flow curves, it looks like we're going to continue to spill at higher volumes longer, and what that does to TDG. And I also
I agree. I don't want to pull fish over to the first powerhouse if we're not running it. You know, I mean, if this would mean running the first powerhouse for some reason.
This year's not.
I don't want to split the powerhouses. Yep. So, I mean, we have to think about how we do this.
Just, we're going to have to massage the language. These options are pretty.
Yeah. I mean, these are kind of policy level options. And the issue of moving spill, I know, is a hot button issue with people. But we're not talking about cutting into the 100 or whatever the spill levels are prescribed for the project. And it's going to be difficult to get into trying to preserve overgeneration spill. I think that's a pretty hot button topic that a lot of people have different opinions about. But I mean, the proposal's out there. You know, how we want to use it. There's three levels that I see. One is you implement it and just walk away. You say, okay, from now on, this is a new operating range for Powerhouse 1. That's what it is. The other is to implement in this kind of stepwise fashion, just in those cases where we know we're having other problems someplace else, and this would help us with those problems. And the other one is, if nobody wants to go there, I would at least chop off, and BPA will probably say something about this, that bottom end of the operating range. And it's 300 CFS. It's not K CFS. It's 300 CFS. So
we'd like to see it change as a package, not as a piece.
I would too. But that's the worst end of this thing, is that that's what we're trying to get away from. The upper end of it looks better from an operating standpoint, and when you're looking at a unit, when you're running through the beat analysis and the strike and all the stuff that we've been doing, it's not just the wild-ass gas. It does look better as far as passage for things going through a turbine unit. But what looks bad is that very low end. Even 1% looks kind of bad in this unit. Davidson has said, you know, how come you guys aren't even going higher? Well, you know, we chose this level for now.
Yeah.
If we had more data, we might be concerned about that, even the peak efficiency point. But, I mean, I would at least like to chop off that bottom.
If you can add it on the top, move the whole range up.
Well, that's what we're proposing.
Well, you're proposing a bigger than 3/10 on the top.
If you 2K take on the top, it's 3/10 on the bottom.
Right, and that would be great if you could adopt the whole thing, but if you can't, you just want to
just go 3/10 on the top. Okay, so there's an option.
I feel 3/10.
That's a third option. So those are the little baby step. You know, I mean, that's the baby step, and then there's multiple baby steps, and there's the
I'm
full.
Not going to call them 3/10 on that.
Okay, so at
my
least
marching orders is to not lose any.
Yeah, that's fine.
And, so that's
if we can move up to 3/10, then that's the fall back to the bottom position for me, but I'm not sure I'm going to go that far. But at least if we could agree that that's done.
At 3/10?
Yeah.
I'm good.
I don't know. Other guys on the phone.
So you're the 3/10 going from the 7.3 to 7.5? Is that what?
Yeah.
Is that the 3/10 you're talking about?
I'm talking about the low end. The low end of 1%, where it's at now, going up to peak. The difference between low end of 1% and peak is less than 1 KCFS.
Yeah.
And that's the piece we're trying to get away from. That's the move up part. Mm-hmm. Move up from the bottom. And the move up from the top is a full 2K.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what folks are getting excited about on the other end of this thing. So we got one side, no one, one side, another side, no one, the other end. And I'm trying to get to some, what can we do now to help us get away from what we think is the worst part of this operating range? At least then we get some benefit, I think. And then the next step is, can we move up even higher yet to get to that open geometry point that we all think is the best place to be?
So So you're saying you would extend the 9.8?
This is what I lay awake at night last night.
Huh? Okay.
3 a.m. thinking about it.
You would consider extending the upper range of 9.8 to what? 10.1?
She's taking Ambien.
You've got data in front of you. I'm not looking at that.
It's proposed 7.3 to 9.8.
Whatever it is.
Is the current range, okay?
Right.
So you want to stay with that range. And
is it 2 tenths?
It's, well.
God.
So you go 7.5 to 10?
Well, that's 2 tenths. If you move...
It's only 2 tenths. I thought it was 3.
So you're talking 2 tenths. So 2 tenths gets you out of your worst spot in the low end, 1%. And to keep BPA whole, you move it up to 10. That's fine.
That's what it would be.
Yeah. So your new range would be 7.5 to 10.
Right. Now that's just...
There you go.
That's a tiny baby step. But it gets us away from
that. I'll let your infant toddle that.
And, you know, I mean, what you have to visualize is the range, how these units operate. It's very steep on the downhill side, and then it flattens out somewhat. And that, so you're going from peak to 1% below peak. It's a very small.
Well, you got to remember, MGR's overall curve is very.
Very peaked. It goes down the other side, too. Yeah.
The only thing I say about that is it looks great on numbers, but you know as well as I do when we started just when we start running through the head. We already have a 1-2% KCFS fluctuation over the season that we just absorb.
Well, all those head levels would have a new lower end. All of them would.
Yeah.
You're shifting the entire table.
So I don't mind talking about this as an overall operation. Okay. That what we're talking about now is a change to overall operation period year round. Okay.
Right.
But that's
what we were after originally. Was that
right?
You know, and that's what folks are saying. No, until we do a study.
Right.
And so our second step is, well, what about these 1, 2, 3,
right.
4?
So it would be nice if we could at least go through 1, 2, 3, or 4, mm-hmm. and say whether or not you would support implementation of this larger range to help reduce things, like get us back to 120. Where we're supposed to, because we're exceeding gas waiver now.
If you want to go through, your first one actually was sea lion presence.
Sea lion presence, but also to maintain 100K.
Well, your first one was 100, if you run over 100K for sea lion presence or fallback. Number two was 120
right.
gas.
Right. Yep.
Number three was powers 2 debris. And
yes.
Number four was April 10 prior to spill.
Yes.
So, obviously the 3 tenths one, not a problem for me. Prior to April 10th, that's fine. It's outside first passion season. I can talk about that. The only downside is
that
Celts. Do you want to argue about Celts? That's another form.
Yeah, that one I hadn't really looked at before.
That one I think needs a little more. So number one, when you're talking your 100K, you're going to go over 100K because you're worried about fallback or delay and sea lion presence. So for me, I'm going, from my recollection of the data and looking at the basically, the flow lines is 110 is where you start seeing your delay issues. So I'd say you'd want to.
Continue to caveat that with that was data that was showing that 110 was really about 101.
No, it was 120.
It was 120.
It was 120. 120 equals.
What does 120 equal?
About 110.
Is it 110?
Yeah, because you got to remember.
But
50
you,
was
but
25. 75 was 50. Let's see, the 120 was 110 because as you go higher, your orifice coefficient got closer to what it was supposed to be. So the 120 which we were testing was actually 110.
And what else we got?
I still don't want you to get them off. I like you. So my point is, let's say you do 110 or sea lion presence, then you come up with sea lion presence number. Is 1 too many to be worried about, or is 20? Because you can't just say sea lions. Are you talking a singular sea lion is enough to trigger, like, oh my god, we need to cut back on this because we're worried about sea lions, or do you want to say 10? I'm saying 1's probably ridiculously conservative. Pick your favorite number after that.
1.
I knew you were ridiculously conservative.
Okay.
Okay.
That's fine. 1.
1.
Any sea lions in the lions. Yeah, anytime in spring.
Okay.
But I can argue with you. I can accept the 110. I mean, the point would be to
minimize fallback, and fallback where we saw
fallback
110.
Delay
but 120 is where we saw the inflection point where fallback started to really
and
pick
also
up.
And also, that's when you saw your quote-unquote 8-hour delay plus or minus 6 hours.
So you want us to exceed what's in the FOP, what's agreed to go to 110.
This is another FOP. That's the whole thing. To get this approved, you're going to have to get everyone to agree to this. So you're already not in the FOP.
No. Well, you take these each
yeah.
as that.
I mean, if you want to get really brass tacky, you
no,
say, hey, this
no.
is you're trying to change the FOP, which technically we are.
We are.
So you're going to have
we
to
are.
Take this to Riog and get everyone to agree to
it. He says,
so.
Take it to Riog. I like
it's
that.
Fine.
No, I'm just saying, I'm trying to make it easy.
Did you hear that?
If you want to argue about it, I'm saying technically you should take it to Riog. I don't think
okay.
you want to.
Okay. This goes to Riog.
That's ridiculous.
And you're going to be no.
I'm serious. This is going to be on. And you're going
to
be in charge of it.
So 110.
Hey, Dennis.
Yep.
Sorry to interrupt.
No.
I know it's lightly there.
Yep.
But I'm going to have to leave.
Okay.
Oh, well played.
Yeah. And so I'm sorry.
No.
I'm not comfortable
no.
yet with this proposal.
Okay.
And I need to talk with folks in a little more detail
okay.
before I can change my earlier concerns. I'm not ready to support this proposed change at this time
okay.
yet.
Are you comfortable with the proposed
two-tenths
change?
7.5 to 10?
Yeah, 7.5 range. The current operating range bumped that 2/10 from the lower into the...
I mean, you know, that's a small baby step, and so it's going to be a lot easier to accept because, one, it's going to be such a small change, we probably wouldn't notice it.
Right.
No matter if we spent $10 million studying it. Yeah, that's probably a lot more acceptable, but... Once again, I've got to get my mind around the biological engineering and power
okay.
trade-offs that we're considering here
okay.
Before I'm ready to make this change.
Okay.
So,
well,
sorry, I got to go.
No, it's okay.
Okay, Ross.
We're gonna have to set up another special meeting. I'm sure.
You have to pull everyone.
Yeah, I think
yeah.
so.
Yeah.
All right, sorry
okay.
guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ross.
You're speaking for Washington, okay. aren't you?
What bothers me is that we do have gas levels
the conference.
At 120, what, 7 at
oh, yeah.
Warrendale or something
yeah.
like that right now.
Right now we've...
So this Warrendale is something we could do.
Down.
Warrendale and Camas are running 128 and 125.
I highly recommend that we implement this now.
The 7.5 to 10?
No. I want to go the full 2K.
Gas mileage, tell you how much
to drop.
That's going to be?
It will be some. It's something we can
2%.
Do. 2%. It's something
what,
we can
you
do.
Be there? It's within the error of the measurement device.
It's what we can do.
Why wouldn't we that's reduce not. Spill by 20K if we could, knowing that our route of passage through B1 is has good survival?
Yeah, but
Cryptic says that they're not going to support the 120% waiver.
Both of them are gone. They're going through
Steelhead are the ones we're most worried about. All Chinook, they're talking about delisting all Chinook. Steelhead is the ones that have the worst survival. So
they're not
delisted
yet.
Steelhead are the ones we're most worried about. I'm
going
to
take lunch.
We'll be back. 3 days
come on, Bill, help me out here.
Do we want to take a...
No, because I'm leaving in half an hour. So I want to get this done.
Okay.
All right.
So you
can keep pushing.
Okay.
3 o'clock.
So okay.
All those who want to leave can leave. And
okay.
Give me a call.
So what about the 120 TDG waiver being compromised?
Whoa.
So 120. The issue I have with that is where are you measuring it? Right now we don't have casket.
Give it to me again. I don't know if it's in my phone.
Warrendale. We got Warrendale and Camas.
3336.
Okay. Yeah. Let's use Warrendale.
Here's
Warrendale.
5416.
Gas at RS1 doesn't really affect.
The river is kind of like expanding from
yeah.
the Spillway out
yeah.
right now to include both sides and everything.
Yeah,
kind of
so
you've
got Cascade Island, so you're not able to measure the benefits of reducing 20K spillway. So you're not even know if you're making a damn good difference.
Well, you would.
Overall.
You know you would.
20K out of 300 spill?
But what's
it's not even a percentage.
It's you're doing what you can.
Why wouldn't you want to reduce gas?
Yeah, I can also.
You don't want to reduce gas.
I can also cut out a freckle because I'm worried about getting skin cancer too, but I'm probably going to get more damage from an infection.
Quit trying to change the subject.
I'm just saying, that's the metaphor we're using.
Those redheads,
here.
That's a different problem.
Yeah, that's a 2 years.
So, what about having additional room at B2 to be able to ramp units down to manage getting screens.
That one I said is a no-brainer. I told you that 2 weeks ago. I said, if you think this is going to help you deal with debris issues at BT to keep screens in or run that system, it's a no-brainer.
So you literally said it was 2K above.
If it helps you with Powerhouse 2, and my whole plan had been, is what I'm saying, the one piece of data we do know is running Powerhouse 2 units at the mid-range, not the high range and not the super low range, is the best for fish. You see, least scaling and least mortality. So anytime you have problems, that's what we always do. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, right. If we want to make this a package and we want to make it sellable to the fish manager, say, hey, let's operate Powerhouse 2 as a hard constraint, saying that's where we want to be because we know that's the best for fish. We think Powerhouse 1 is the best for fish. Your volume, you're pretty close to neutral. You might get a slight benefit for the Powerhouse 1 generation. You do that package, everyone's happy.
Maybe.
Not part of it.
You'll be more happy. I'm just saying, it's like it's hard for us to say, I can't see a biological benefit. All I've got is a little bead, yes or no, whacking something. From the data, you think that makes a little sense.
Whacking. You have biological data.
You have a bead. Just bead. And you're trying to expand.
Find a bead, quick. We need to have you down
quick
at the model.
Bead. I've been to the model. I see the bead strikes. Okay. I played with the bead strikes.
And well, it's not just a little bead. I mean, you know, it's more robust than that.
It does make
we
sense.
We spent a lot of work on
this. My point is, I'm saying, you have bead strikes. It's almost impossible to measure biological benefit.
It is. Yeah, you're.
We
it's an inference.
You can measure a biological benefit Powerhouse, too. So I'm saying, it seems like we're hell-bent on one, ignore another.
I agree with
you. Package them together.
I agree with
you. And you could probably sell this and you'd be done.
That's part A out of four parts. Mm-hmm. I agree with you on that one, so we're good. So in the case of Powerhouse 2, needing to back off of Powerhouse 2, we can pick up Powerhouse 1 so that BPA doesn't come over and kick us on the table. So there's one.
Why won't BPA use Powerhouse 2?
Mm-hmm.
Why won't they?
Well, the problem is you're cutting back on
load at B2, load, so you got to pick it up at B1.
Their issue is you got to pick it up somewhere, so you're
constraining them at B1. As long as you can pick it up at B1,
you're at the top of B1. You're at the top of B2. We want to come down to B2. We need to go up a little bit higher at B1. That's all it is. So, and he's okay with that, and so other folks are probably okay with that because we know we have a real problem there. I realize the gas issue is a small one, but. You know, it is a gesture towards the state water quality agencies that we're doing something to reduce gas when we can.
We're in 7Q10. You're off the hook, technically.
In this case, we are, and I agree with you. At 300,
but I mean, we're going to come back down.
Colin, this isn't just for 360 case bill. This is for cases where we exceed 120% TDG. So that's like 150 case bill under a lot of years, and 20K could matter in that, you know, if it keep you below for weeks in some of those situations. So it can matter in those situations.
Yeah, I just don't want...
I don't think you want to be on record as saying, no, we wouldn't do
actually,
that.
Actually, we are on record as saying we think you could go up 120. We've said that repeatedly.
Yeah, but that doesn't help us with waivers.
He's on record now.
Well, right now, we've got the waiver. We're supposed to go down to 110.
Well, no, the 110 is the thing, you get waivers for 120. 110 is the standard.
Right.
You're supposed to be trying to achieve
the
standard.
Supposed to come back to the standard, not continue to ask for waivers and waivers and waivers.
Your blue-collar panel told us all gas team hasn't met in about 8 years. That's the last time I was at a meeting, so...
More than that.
Yeah, I know. It's been a rainy
decade.
Yeah. So my point is that if you guys are really that serious about it, then I would instigate that. That's going to show a bigger movement to the water quality agency, reinitiating that, get those water quality agencies to meet and say, what can we do to meet this? That's going to be a bigger push than saying, hey, we're going to decrease total gas 0.2%, or maybe we can't even measure it.
Well,
I mean, if we're really trying to make a political gesture, do something meaningful. This is not meaningful.
It's every piece is meaningful, I think. I think that's... And that's not... I mean, that's...
Yeah.
Quit trying to change the subject.
You're the one who's saying dissolved gas trying to be meaningful change to the water.
I think it can be
saying,
when you're talking at 100 and when we're at times we're in less than 150K, but we exceed 120.
Exactly. You receive, but not at Cascade. You exceed it at Camas, and Camas is not a compliance point. That's our problem. Camas is not a compliance point.
No, it's not. I'm not going there.
Has Camas Washougal in their waiver forms? Yet we're still using it because of
Rumble. Actually, it's even higher at Cascade Island.
A step in the right direction.
Big steps.
It's going to be a difficult sell from the fish agency. I mean, we can elevate this thing and get this into a bigger regional discussion because you know how it's going to go.
Yeah, I'm saying if you package it, package it with Powerhouse 2, everyone needs to.
I don't want to elevate it, but let's go through.
I know, I'm saying pack to the powerhouse too. Keep it so you're close to volume control. I don't care if you give up a little spill mess up. Pack to the powerhouse too, saying let's decrease it. We know that we have. That's my point. We have no biological data showing how big a benefit this is going to be, and all we have is bead strike and some blue tag got
here. You're right.
And this,
we do have.
Well, moving fish away from that bad spill.
Except for steelhead. So the problem with steelhead is steelhead's an improvement. If you move steelhead away, you're actually...
You're going the other way.
Well, but we also have a really good working sluiceway. This doesn't include the modifications of sluiceway. So hopefully
your
surface...
Is the same.
Porpoise.
Why would you be any different than this?
For sluiceway efficiency.
If anything, 20K more in the B1 tail race is good for egress.
Well, my point is you're going to have even fewer fish going through. If your sluiceway works even better, you're going to have fewer fish using your MGRs. You're going to have more fish using the S-Trust sluiceway.
Right. It's a good idea. And then so ramp it up to reduce gas.
Well, ramp it up
so you can have better operations of B2.
My point is gas isn't a problem. You don't see gas as a problem at 120. So that's why I'm stuck
You drank the fish passage center Kool-Aid.
No, I'm actually looking at the date this year where you've seen you've had 125, almost 130 in the river, and you've seen very little sun.
It doesn't matter what we think about 120. The 120 is the law. I mean, that's what we're stuck with right now. And any arguments that are saying we don't care about that are not going to go very far.
It's not saying care about it. I'm just saying it's like you can't prove this biological benefit. You're going to have an unmeasurable benefit for total dissolved gas.
I don't know about that. Let's explore that.
I asked Dennis. I said, "Show me what your improvement is."
Yeah, let's explore that somewhat. Well, I'm not talking. I know for this year we wouldn't.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just a gesture. Another year or so, I think it would matter.
Well, then pick your compliance point. You're talking in low flow years, Warndales, and you think you're going to have to use Cascade Island. If you're going to use Cascade Island, yeah, that is going to be a harder.
It has to be Cascade Island.
Has to be Cascade Island.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But it will be this year, Gary, as the flows drop. There is a point when this kicks back in.
I know.
Yeah, it comes in on hand.
This week, no. But,
yeah, it's coming. Weeks down, yes.
So what additional language can you support?
Like I said.
I think he supports the B2 operational ranges, okay? I thought you said maybe 110K.
I said 110 for sea lines, but by the way, sea lines are all gone.
Right.
So that's not an issue.
What about just 110 spill in general? Not including sea lions.
The reason we picked 110 was for fallback, and if you have fallback, and because fallback in itself is not the worst thing ever, because then you have your trade-off of the fallback loss versus potential any benefits for fish, for juveniles if you have them. The bigger issue is if you have fallback and delay them, and they also get preyed upon by sea lions. That's a situation you don't want to generate.
So can we
sea lions are gone,
boot this to a? I hate to do it, but we're not going to get any relief. It's not going to be a big issue this time of the year anyway. Can we rather than elevating this to the next level, can we have one more discussion with folks? Dave is pretty adamant about things, and so
we have Oregon there.
We get Cooper and you,
can you
Dave,
FPAC next week,
and I'll be in. Unfortunately,
that's
Iowa
right. You're
married
and Ken.
Yeah, Mary and Ken. So it's going to have to be in July or the first week or last week of June. I was thinking beat feedback here before that.
Unless you want to
No. I'm going to be there so I can beat knots on people's heads.
Yeah. Good idea. I like that. I'll bring it back.
But we got to get it out of this.
What room. Date?
Well,
Dr. Gary, he seems
I think we need to look at a calendar.
When's Will's going to be back, too? So you
can be for fourth, fifth, or sixth of
July? Yeah, 4th of July. I'm always
4th is perfect.
Oh, sorry.
The week
July.
Before in June?
I don't have anything going on. That's the problem.
No party.
The week of June 27, Gary?
That's just filling in. 27th?
What day is that?
Monday.
Monday the 27th?
Off of I'm supposed to go to Yellowstone sometime.
It'd be nice if we could nail down the date now.
Yeah.
There's no TMT, there's no SCT, there's no F-bomb, there's no
last
fitterway.
Last week, the month is easier.
Okay.
So did I
Can you do the 27th, Tom?
Awesome. Look, I need to find out when I'm supposed to be driving back from Yellowstone.
Yellowstone.
Driving back from? You're coming back from? Oh, okay.
You're going to be in Yellowstone when?
School next Wednesday. 27, 26, 27.
So the 29th, Wednesday, does that give you a little more?
So you're going to be there the
schedule. 3 weeks. All I'm told is you're in the car, you pack the car, you drive the car. That's all I know.
So I'm going to be driving through Yellowstone. I can feed into a grizzly bear.
There you go. Hey, Tom,
come here. Little friend, we got to show you
something. Here they used to put the jam on people's faces.
This guy.
Okay. Right now, let's propose the 27th. I'm hoping that because his wife works in our office, I can ask her when she's coming back.
You get a hold of her, you're better than me. Yeah,
can you tell me Tom's schedule?
Yeah.
I'm asking her now.
All right. All right. What time?
I'd say 9.
9 a.m.?
9 to noon, that's fine.
A face-to-face meeting?
Yeah, at
where?
Portland District.
I didn't want to be in our staff meeting anyway. Newly to Trevor.
No. You guys can have them.
No, we don't want written comments.
Oh, sure.
Okay, so we'll have an ad hoc meeting on the
27th. An ad hoc F-Palm meeting.
F-Palm meeting F-Palm. At 9 o'clock on the 27th.
So, but do we say, do you guys want to try to move on the 3/10ths? Your 2/10ths operation change right now?
7.5 to 10?
I would like that as a baby step. That's one piece of progress.
I would say,
kills that low end.
I would propose it as a package. The 2/10ths change along with the Powerhouse 2 unit operational ranges used to curtail.
That's fine.
So when Ben's getting ready to put screens back in, we can move, if we want to operate B2 at a little bit lower range while we're doing this, we can put more flow through B1.
It'd be makes total sense.
Okay.
You're good with that?
Oh,
okay.
That's a good thing. You want AFF?
Talk about that AFF issue once, because we need a little bit more time to figure out where we're at on that. So
we could have an AFF in the afternoon. I know. It's my first day back too. It's gonna.
That's gonna be chaos.
I hate that. Right. 400 or 500 emails, and then, but everybody's gonna be in the same room.
I won't be there. Not that you need
I want to continue. So, Gary, your vote
what?
For the two things?
No,
I won't be there in the afternoon for
okay,
an AFF
then
meeting. We'll do that a different time.
Different time. You need to be there, Jamie.
I want to finish this real quick. So, Operation 2/10ths move, NOAA supports that.
Oh, yeah.
As well as the proposed shifting of flow over to B1 to...
Well, I've only heard Tom on that. I think
right.
Other folks, well, you know...
Well, I just want to get whether or not you'd support
oh,
that
absolutely.
Being put that as
yeah.
an action.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's going to be fairly volume neutral, right?
Yeah. Yeah, shifting B2 flow over to B1. But we'll...
Up to the limit
up
of
so,
2K.
Yeah.
So it seems like the path forward here is, Dennis, if you can put together an email, say... At FPALM today,
yeah.
we agreed to the two small steps of
yes.
7.5 to 10
yes.
and shift the flow to B1.
Yes.
Capture that as a decision point that was unanimously supported here today.
Right.
And
BPA as well.
BPA.
As long as it doesn't increase spill by your shifting it over, yes.
Yeah.
As long as that's the...
Yeah, we're not...
I think you guys have come out a little bit ahead on that one.
We're asking just to shift flow, whatever...
It's just it's
K
to
K,
B1. And there's no spill in there at all.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
So we can capture that and send it out so that people are aware of the decision that was made here today. Tammy, you're good with this?
We'll get it as soon as the meeting's over.
And if anyone has any comments on that, they can... I think it'd be nice... It would be appropriate to summarize it in an email, though.
Yep.
People are aware. If they have any comments, they can comment. And then the third thing of the email would be... For a more robust discussion to nail down specifics, we have the 27th planned,
right.
9 a.m.
Okay. So they'll fall back and then the TAG gas
all right.
issues here.
So
good.
Just so I'm clear, we could also have a draft teletype created for operational changes for B2.
But we
shifting
won't be
flow.
Seeing any... Any effect of that for weeks, probably, where we would need to.
Well, once we get close to when we want to put screens back in, that's at a point in time.
Yeah.
But I want to have something
okay.
crafted
when,
with RTC.
Yeah.
All right. Baby steps are good.
Okay.
Whenever we get screens in.
Okay. I'm
all right.
a little cautious that there aren't a lot of people on the phone or a lot of managers
right.
weren't.
Well, that's why we have this meeting in hopes that everyone's going to come. We understand that everyone can't come, which is why Dennis is going to summarize this and send it out in an email to those folks that aren't here.
I will.
Okay. All right. We have a decision. We have a few coordination forms and a few FPP change forms. We can continue to push and get done in a half hour, or we can take a break for lunch and come back. Scott?
You're going to lose me if we take a break. But
all right.
I'm okay with what you got coming.
Keep pushing, Tom?
You got about 15, 20.
All right. John Day, North Ladder Outage, winter 2012-13. Who's taking this, Tam?
Mira.
Mira?
John Day North entrance modification required the second year of construction because not all work could be fitted into one. So it was divided into two, so it's going to be a mirror outage for this year, which is early November 5th through the end of March of 2013.
Good.
What's that, is this year?
I think it's a more prudent approach because then we at least have more flexibility, and with those letters will be that letter will be returning in both years on time.
Yeah, I prefer trying to get it done in one, but it doesn't sound like it's an option. So
not if you want your fish turbines back.
Okay.
I didn't see an email from Gary. Did he say anything on this one?
He had previously said that the fish turbines take priority over the lamprey work, so he would rather see the lamprey work be broken up over 2 years.
Yeah, we're fine. It would have been great to get in 1 year. There's going to be probably some forlorn looks at the office, but it is what it is.
Okay, so you said the ladder's going to be out till the end of March?
Yes.
Is there any passage there all the way up for Spring Chinook?
Yeah, we'll have the second ladder, the south ladder.
Okay.
Good with this, Tom? As good as you can be?
I mean, yeah. And we'll take a look after this year and see if there's anything out back, and then talk about jockeying around if we have to.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Trevor, Ed, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
I can't monitor as we go.
That's fine. What good is it going to do you, though? You're still only going to have half of it done, so if you don't want the other half done the next year, I guess that's fine.
If we saw a big impact in November, you could shift it and do more in the spring.
Mm-hmm. And you're Gary right. agrees with this as well. So we're moving to...
Okay.
You did. You're fine.
John did.
I trust John Day ladder outage.
Whatever you say is good for me.
Your guys are...
John Day ladder outage.
Tracking this.
John Day ladder outage.
It's going to be out until April 1st. That's my only concern. It's a little bit long.
Yeah,
they get it back up before.
Okay, the issue for that was I'd like to see us. Concern I have is that our counts for that period of time are pretty thin. I mean, we have some counts for John Day that are approaching what, 5 years old or so, Tammy.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, as populations change and structures change, I'd like to periodically recheck adult counts for those periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So that means expanding the count season. Every 5 years, we do a 1 or 2 year outside, you know, check that month. Maybe it's the month of November and the month of...
Fortunately, Aaron's not here, but he did want to discuss that topic. Definitely, fish counts. What do we need to do?
Okay,
and
yeah.
And where we need to do them. What's the important ones? Which ones we can eliminate?
I'd like to do that, too.
I mean, it's a very important thing that needs to be done and discussed real soon.
Yeah, the counts are important. You know, there's some of them that are more important than others, and there's some times
we
of the year
some,
that...
Some, you know...
We have thin data.
Do we need really? Do we need those counts?
Yes.
So this is a July FPOM agenda, or
yeah,
August?
I think we can do that.
A July or August FPOM agenda with burn. Really, I mean, okay. I'm stepping into this new job. It's everyone already knows this, but infrastructure needs are increasing. Budget is tending to decrease over time, and so we're at the point where we're going to have to make some difficult decisions. And Certainly would like to make sure we're collecting the priority data, but we just don't want to continue to blindly go along and just pay for data that, you know what, no one's really using.
Right.
We could be a little smarter about how we're doing this. So,
do you
want next
to come
step.
To the July FPL meeting and explain all mm-hmm. that, or shall we move on?
We should move on, but...
Shut up, Tim.
Hey.
Moving on.
Is that what I heard? Okay, so yeah, I am also concerned about how late we are, but this is an overlap. What we're most concerned about is the overlapping seasons, and I was trying to figure out what the overlap was here. How long?
It was going to be for 2 to 3 weeks in January and February.
The overlap for this year, because we do have 2 weeks requirement for annual maintenance of the self level as well.
And so it's a 2 week overlap, and that 2 weeks is going to be in early January.
Yes. Yeah.
Mid to late January.
Mid to
actually,
late January.
Because this year is earlier, because it was requested that way.
The 9th through the.
Yeah, 9th.
End of January. So, two to three weeks, and
the
that
two
was
middle
two
weeks of January, is that what we're talking about?
Yes, and that was to also accommodate
the
survey.
The more concerned I get.
It's going to be before the end of January. It's going to be the end of our.
The end of January, so the last 2 weeks of January.
The end, because it's 2 weeks prior. You know, when we start, I'm just saying it's kind of.
There will be no
outage?
Overlap.
Depending, yes, it's a 2 week.
And it's the last 2 weeks of January.
Not the last, it's mid.
Mid to late January, and that's to accommodate the
term. It's almost the end. It's within a week of the end.
It is. It'll be back by the 31st.
I'm tracking.
And there is no dual outage after March 1st.
At the end. At the end, but it'll be a little 2 weeks. And it's only 2 weeks.
At the middle to the end of the month.
Okay. Moving on. I thought we moved on.
I tried. 8.3, McNairy hydroacoustic removal and recalibration. So
August 22 to August 25th, we'll likely move the hydroacoustic equipment.
Okay, the only concern I have with that one is that we have to be cognizant of the temperature issues in the collection channel. So
correct.
If we have a north load requirement, hopefully not this year, but if we do, and we're trying to maintain collection channel temperatures, we don't want to have the wrong units out at the wrong time.
Yeah, they don't want to bounce this one on top of the 2 week earlier.
Or you turn the units back in to have them out. Yeah. Remember
the details.
And this is only going to be a half a day per day. For 3 units out.
Right. No, I mean, that can be bad, though.
Okay.
So what is...
Which units are they, Greg?
Ann's put down units 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 6, 8.
Can't you do those when they're out earlier in the month?
I asked the same question, and they said they couldn't.
Okay.
So you're going to have them out for your work at the same time as this?
No, we're done with our work most likely by the time.
Okay, well, then that's
that.
Not an issue. Yeah. Then. Yeah. It's just the issue of temperature. Yeah. So we want to make sure that if we're not dumping hot water on top of fish or.
But those
water.
Are units that are out for temperature are the low units, not the high units.
The high units, yeah.
And he's talking about doing work on the low units, so you're fine.
11 yeah. and 13, I see in here.
Well,
those are the upper.
First?
Hmm?
What's his order? Is he going from a low to high?
It's half at a time, or it's 3 units at a time. Mm-hmm. 8 units total. All I'm saying is let's not, if the 11, 13, and 9, those upper high units are needed for temperature issues, we don't want to take them out until we get past that point. Or we take them out earlier before we have a problem.
But we almost never see it in late August.
Isn't it? I thought that was usually when we do.
It's usually been late July.
It says okay, August is when we get.
First
week of
August.
Okay.
So why can't they take the stuff out since March and study there? Why can't they do this when the units are going to be out anyways?
That's a good question. I've asked that one. And they agreed. Why was it good?
Sorry.
Well,
ignore it.
My only concern is temperature. So if that's not an issue, then whatever.
Yeah. Okay.
I've got that down.
All right, as long as we're not dumping excessively...
We're not changing your temperature control system we've set up, or we're not offering that.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see that.
Good. Thank you.
But, of course, they want to pull these things out for the next coordination issue when they want to reinstall them, I guess. when they had put in the trolley pods.
Well, that's getting into the next coordination form. And so we'll just take the next three as a lump. Trolley pipe installation at McNary, Lomo, and Granite.
McNary, they plan on November 1 to number 10. November 1 to 10 for the powerhouse, and November 12 to 26 for the spill bays. Okay. That's at McNary.
You're okay with
any issues there?
Okay.
All right.
More monumental trolley pipe. Looks like October 17th to the 28th.
And is that just project-wide trolley pipe, or are they splitting up like spillway powerhouse again?
Was that?
Are they split as this like project-wide? Is that how they're installing
it?
Or is this all powerhouse?
This no, it's... Like it's both.
It looks like both.
Pipes will be placed at each major pier nose between the powerhouse units and on all spillway pier noses.
So between that period of time.
All right.
So there have to be a unit change, you know, priority change as well with all that.
Right. Same thing for lower Granite.
And then lower Granite would be later on, if I could.
During end of December and early January.
Yeah.
So we're okay.
We're in a lot of work period.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, first of.
We're still in December, so we'll coordinate it with you all.
That's right.
But that's. All right.
Let's get eyes.
Right.
Okay.
All right. We're good on trolley pipe insulation. Gary, Tom, everyone's on board.
Mm-hmm.
Scott. Okay.
Lucky.
And. Lomo switchgear replacement is our last wall-to-wall change form.
Okay. This is one that raised a lot of eyebrows last month. It will take the powerhouse outage to do this because they have to look at SQ2 they're doing work on. You take that out, it takes out all the CO2 from the fire extinguisher units. You cannot run the units without CO2 or fire extinguisher unit going on. Power will be back fed into the dam for the BPA line, but the outage will be from November 15th to November 30th.
So you have 100% spill?
100% spill.
Could you do that in about a little bit later, right? When's our fallback problem?
Fallback
problem. For well, you're talking where you're at.
We're at Lomo.
Oh, Lomo. Okay,
Lomo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I could guide that if it was McGarry. This is Mo or
this is Lomo.
This is Lomo.
Lower Monumental.
November 15th through the 30th.
100%.
And you're aware of this, Scott?
I'm not aware of it, but I am now.
Yeah. Are you going to get a wig for that? Since you guys are so worried about water quality, you know, better get a wig for that.
Thanks, we'll look into that.
We'll look into that.
Hopefully it'll be warm enough.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Well, thank you.
So,
what do you think, Tom? 100%. Pretty good. River flow, what are you anticipating? River flows at that time? The normal average is what, about
below
35?
Yeah,
below 30.
30. So it's 30K spill.
Maybe two.
Should be fine. It'll be above 110, but
it'll be. Well, they'll need to get a waiver for it.
Yeah,
that'd be interesting.
Because you guys care.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah,
we do.
We do.
We're trying to do the best thing for fish.
You guys. Are
so,
the best.
Gary, Noah is okay with this?
I can't speak for Bill, so sorry. I don't know.
Yeah,
but Trevor can.
Trevor can. Trevor is the hybrid.
I won't.
He won't, and I can't, so we don't have another opinion on it. And where's Bill?
Sure, send out an email. He'll respond.
He'll respond, yeah.
Tom's okay.
Right. Thank you, Tom.
Yep. Scott,
you want me to call Bill and get him down here?
I tried, but I apparently have the wrong number for his cell phone. But,
you guys do.
You guys should
notice that.
So.
He gave you the wrong number, too?
So. I mean, we're moving on. We're done with coordination forms. Moving to task group updates. Sea lion.
Fishery.
Just go down the shed.
Mm-hmm.
Shad fishery.
There's no update.
Okay.
So that ain't happening.
It's
probably not happening.
No fish wheel?
There's no fish.
No, I haven't seen a fish wheel.
And the shad numbers are, well, at least were tiny.
Are they still tiny?
I don't know.
Yeah, there's, well, they had 6,000 over Bonneville the other day.
Oh,
so,
yeah, but that went back down.
Yeah, and they dropped back down.
For 3,000 or something.
Just
like,
yeah.
Just taking off.
Yeah.
They're
fishing for them. They're all just trying their hardest and dying.
Yeah,
nothing on AFF Orange Channel.
We're meeting on August, and it says that.
At Bonneville?
At
Dalles. Oh, the Dalles.
Yeah. So we're missing them all at Bonneville, they're all
showing. No, they're past in Bonneville.
Okay.
But yeah, they haven't seen any fishing activity.
Nothing like they usually are.
Can't you pull sleds yet?
What?
You got any sea lions left?
No, but it might be like one.
We're going to pull sleds?
Yeah, I'd like to wade a little bit. Good. Just because it's difficult to do.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
They're going over the top of some of them.
We didn't build them high enough to take 35 foot tailwater or whatever.
All right, moving on. We have just a couple change forms to get through. The Dalles spill pattern. Is this?
Doug? We visited that at the last FPOM, and if I understood it correctly, Gary, you'd like to have a little bit
yeah,
of time.
Yeah, I did look at it. Yeah, it's.
Did you have any thoughts or?
It's what we have. I don't like it, but it's until we can get those wire ropes.
Okay.
I think that's, for Tim's benefit here, I think we should have a discussion about infrastructure, feeling infrastructure here one of these days.
Mm, great.
Because I saw a lot of it at Bonneville. Trevor and I saw a lot of it at Bonneville last, 2 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess in some places out there. I mean, Ben knows this. We saw water coming out of places where there shouldn't be water coming out of. There's cracks.
Yeah. We did finally get a PM for the Phase 2 report for the Bradford Island, Cascades Island assessment. So, you know, we did Phase 1, which offered some recommendations. Phase 2 actually prioritizes that and talks about what happens if you have failures.
And that's actually a good topic to have Tom engaged with as well, since CritVic has the ability to lobby for additional funds where the Corps does not.
Oh. Can I, let's,
our partner.
Save our fish weight. Save our fish weight.
Yes.
Do you want my love?
Jesus.
Tom.
Can I put that on the agenda for next FPOM, that we have a discussion about that? Because we do have some things we saw at Bonneville I'd like to bring people's attention to, and I don't know, you know, there may be other things too. There's a side gate at Bonneville that was banging around in the spillway that shouldn't be. Actually, water was going the wrong way through it and sloshing in.
I got
there's,
you.
There's that fish valve in the Bradford Island where water's shooting out of. There was a crack in the Bradford Island wall that was shooting water out. There's
I tried.
A number of things I took pictures of. It's like, you know.
I think I wrote down
the wrong number. We could have catastrophic failure of the Cascade Island ladder because those braces are no longer bracing against anything other than air.
And I told the critical infrastructure folks, I said,
it wasn't at the point of
catastrophic failure, and I was told that I might be exaggerating a little bit, and I said, no, I am not.
Well, I will bring it up to
you. Tom.
Yes.
Ice Harbor, turbine unit operations. We have a change form.
Jellystone can wait.
That's looking really. It's a system reliability issue. Scott,
it's a better way to write up what we had in that report because it was overlooked in the previous write up. So it's no change necessarily, but it's hopefully a better. We'll catch their eye better, and we won't have the same mistake we had last spring. That's the main reason for the rewrite.
Yeah, honestly, I haven't opened that one to think of it yet. I got down to the Dalles spill pattern, so I was out there yesterday looking at it, so.
What do you think about the Dalles pattern? Same thing.
Until you get the wire ropes, you got to get the wire ropes.
It's priority, Scott.
The priority is still the same.
There's really no change in operations, yeah. But what happened last year is they overlooked it because of the way it was written. Yeah. So we tried to clean up the writing to make sure it didn't happen again.
Okay. Yeah. Bottom line is Ice Harbor shouldn't be operating a single unit on the Ice Harbor Franklin number 2.
Right, 3 or 4 cannot operate singly ever for any reason.
I'm assuming it'll be highlighted in the FPP for changes for this coming up draft. I'll look at it. I remember talking about, I think it's fine.
But we wanted to get it in place before that so they don't do it as the summer comes on.
I will give you the tentative yes, and I will review if there's a problem. Yeah.
Thank you. Bill, are you okay with this new?
Yeah,
it's a new language to reflect the old.
It's the same thing.
Priority.
Basically, but two sentences in a paragraph.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Tentative approval from CritFix, so we're going to move forward with this. So we'll communicate this to the project. And I believe the last one, Greg. This Lomo.
This one is, forget this one entirely.
Because
we split it up and other things.